Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, ho, ho, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this foreshortened holiday week. Merry Christmas, and particularly happy solstice to you. Solstice, it's the reason for the season. And solstice happened yesterday, and so I'm feeling a little better today. Because each day gets a little bit longer now. Oh yes, we've the brutality of the full teeth of winter yet to deal with. But every day will get a little bit longer. Until soon, it'll be time to start thinking about putting that garden in the spring. Because Bambi has to eat, too. And it makes it so much more satisfying later in the year when you know that you're sending your son-in-law to hunt jerky on the hoof after they've eaten your tomatoes and your hot peppers and your sweet peppers and right down to the ground. Yeah, Bambi's belly's full and mine's empty. We can remedy that. Oh, that's going to get me in trouble. But anyway, a very happy holiday season to you all. And I'm going to try to do a little bit better job of being in the holiday spirit. Got some really cool music lined up. Of course, last night was also the first night of Hanukkah. A very happy Hanukkah to the Hanukkah celebrants in the audience. And any other holiday that comes along. See, that's the trick, cherishing life so that we understand that every day is a holy day. Because if there is anything sacred on this planet, it is life itself. So, let's see, where to start this evening? We've got a veritable smorgasbord on our hands. And some sillier than others, some downright infuriating, some maddening. And some funny. Sadly, less of it funny than perhaps we might like. But you know what? Like I said, going to try to do a little bit better job of being in the holiday spirit thing. So let's start out with a little something, something. Just kick off with a little holiday music to get us in the mood. I don't know. Start thinking about mistletoe and ho 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 and. Let's see. That's what Lucy said on the great Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. It's mistletoe and ho 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 and presents for pretty girls. Yeah, right. And what did she want later in the program? Real estate. You know, Lucy would be broke now if she was a real person with that real estate. But at any rate, I got a cut in the mail from. Our critic at large, Reverbo, who always, always keeps it personal, makes it personal. And he says, this is a killer cut from 1968. The only words that come to mind is, whoa, will somebody please get the door? Otis Redding is here for Christmas and we gotta let him in. And I agree. You gotta let him in. So a little Christmas music to get things started. Right here on the horn.
Treat me nice. me a diamond ring for Christmas. I feel like I'm in paradise. I feel mighty fine, y'all. I got music on my radio. Feel mighty fine, girl. I got music on my radio. Standing beneath that mistletoe, Santa came down the chimney, half past three, y'all. Left all them a good old present for my baby and for me. Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice?
A little bit of that. Now I'll be finding the Christmas spirit somewhere along the way. Oh yeah, Merry Christmas, baby, Otis Redding. And now down to business. Let's see. The Rick Warren thing won't go away. Now I want to share with you the other side of the coin, because on the Rick Warren debate, because I've been reading Bart Kopp for an awfully long time. And I have a profound degree of respect for him. And with that in mind, I saw this earlier today, and I thought it deserved to be shared, because it's a valid take on the situation. With regard to Rick Warren being invited to the inauguration, Bart Kopp says, ordinarily I'd be attacking Obama's decision to let this homophobe speak, but, and you know, there's a question linguistically, and words do matter, that there's a question as to whether Rick Warren is a homophobe or a heterosexist. I tend to think he's a heterosexist because he is advancing a privilege. He's not advancing his fear, he is advancing heterosexual privilege. The privilege in this country at this present time adheres to heterosexual people who are free to enjoy all of the rights secured by the United States Constitution, the various state constitutions, and the state and federal and county and municipal laws that govern marriage and the property rights that adhere thereunto. So I'm not sure he's a homophobe so much as a heterosexist. And words do matter. But Bart says, ordinarily I'd be attacking Obama's decision to let this homophobe speak, but one, it's Obama's inauguration, and he can have whoever he wants. Two, being a black dude, Obama doesn't have to have hatred and bigotry explained to him. Three, he said all year he was going to reach across the aisle and do stuff differently. Why would anyone be surprised that he's kept his word? Four, this sends a signal that he's not going to be needlessly partisan. Five, it could be spectacularly effective strategery. Because how does this make Warren look? This ultra-leftist black Muslim wants the Warren hand job to speak? Doesn't that mean Warren loses some hard-right religio-wacko street cred? And finally, he's my president, and I'm going to back him until I have good reasons not to, but if I know the Democrats, they're already sharpening their knives. All I can say with regard to some of that is no passes. No passes. 8 years, I've watched a group of right-wing, repig-licking, bloodthirsty, murder-handed bastards hand pass after pass after pass to a miserable, ignorant son of privilege, dim leader, George W. Bush. And I can't, and if I'm going to have any integrity, I can't do what they did. And not calling BS on Rick Warren, and not calling BS on Ken Salazar. All right? We haven't even gotten around to that, brothers and sisters. Ken Salazar? This guy, you mean the guy who sat in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee a few years back with to introduce and sing the praises of Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez, who said he would be a fine, upstanding attorney general? That Ken Salazar? And he's going to be in charge of what? My kids' future? The world that my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, as yet unborn and undreamt of, that Ken Salazar is going to be in charge of... we got a great big problem. No passes. No passes. That's all I can tell you. Lord, I think about it, and I think about Salazar sitting there just getting his nose all way up, singing the praises of Alberto Gonzalez. And, you know, I think that brings Ken Salazar's credibility significantly into play. Mm-hmm, I do. So there's, you know, there is stuff to talk about. And no passes. Not if I don't want to be what I loathe most in the right wing. That is a hypocrite. So like I said, the Rick Warren thing just doesn't want to seem to go away. Because another little piece of news came out today. Headline, Warren to be keynote speaker at MLK commemorative service on the day before inauguration. Reading this straight off the page at Think Progress. Reverend Rick Warren, how about we just call him Rick Warren, because there's nothing reverend about a bigot or a heterosexist. Rick Warren, who is President-elect Obama's controversial pick to give the invocation at his inauguration on January 20th, will be the keynote speaker at the Martin Luther King Jr. Annual Commemorative Service at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church on the day before the inauguration. That little silence was provided just to give you a chance to fight back the gorge rising in your throat. Atlantic Progressive News is breaking that story and reporting it. Think Progress notes that before she passed away, Dr. King's wife, Coretta Scott King, declared unequivocally that gay marriage is a civil rights issue and denounced one of the stupid DOMAs, you know, the Defense of Marriage Amendments, that would ban it. Mrs. King was, of course, entirely and 100% correct. So, here you have a heterosexist bigot, fundamentalist, money-grubbing, phony baloney preacher doing the invocation at the inauguration. And the day before, he's going to sleaze up Dr. King real good. Am I to understand that not only for the invocation at the inauguration, but for the Martin Luther King Jr. Annual Commemorative Service at Ebenezer Baptist Church, am I to understand that not only for one, but for both of those events, there was not a single solitary minister of the gospel in this entire nation
who could have done an equal or better job? Is that what I'm supposed to take away from this? That we are going to enshrine the heterosexism and the bigotry of the right wing in a place as hallowed as Ebenezer Baptist Church? Because you know what? That makes me feel real icky. And, I mean, I understand all the finer points and so forth. I understand that that Rick Warren invited Obama, and we can be, we can disagree without being disagreeable. I understand that stuff. But you see, one of the things that the Republican Party, of which Rick Warren remains a spokesman, in spirit, if not in fact, one of the things they recognize is that they are absolutely dead to persons of color in this country. That this last election proved that the Republican Party is little more than an extension of old white folks in the southern part of the country. And they've got to find some way to ingratiate themselves with African Americans if they are going to continue to try to destroy this country and rend it asunder. You see what I'm saying? So with the imprimatur of President-elect Obama's approval, Rick Warren is going to go and desecrate Ebenezer Baptist Church. Because, you see, the same way that Rick Warren says, "Brothers and sisters, I have lots of homosexual friends." That speech was repeated time after time, time after time, time after time, all over the South during the Civil Rights Movement. As white bigots, racists, said, "Well, I got lots of Negro friends. I just don't want them. I don't want them marrying my daughter and mixing the races and mongrelizing the races." It's no difference. Imagine, if you will. There was a news story out over the weekend where Rick Warren said, "Well, I certainly do like that Melissa Etheridge music. Golly, she is a fine rock and roller, that Melissa Etheridge. I have many of her albums." And again, you can take that back 60 years and 40, 50 years, and lo and behold, there it is again. Some white bigot out there saying, "Well, you know, I love Little Richard music." Mm-hmm, I do. I love Little Richard. Only problem was, he wouldn't want to sit down at the same lunch counter with Little Richard. You see, does this make sense? I mean, they are the same thing, aren't they? Hypocrisy is hypocrisy is hypocrisy is hypocrisy, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, I got many Little Richard records. That good golly Miss Molly. Oh, that is some humdinger music. And I was reminded of all this because of something else that I saw in the process of preparing for the program this evening. And that is, oh, God, you wish you could make it up, but you can't. Dick Cheney had some sort of a soiree of some sort And they were talking about the music there. During an interview with the Mooney Times, you know, the Washington Times, owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. In that interview, Cheney said that he regularly hosted a barbecue at the vice president's residence there, you know, the United States Naval Observatory in D.C., and that barbecue was for, quote, the wounded from Bethesda or Walter Reed and their families, and that they would also often feature a performance by some country and Western stars. Oh, dear. You know, when you read something like that, you know it's just not going to end well. So then they asked Richard B. Dick, big time Cheney, if he'd ever, because you know those modern kids, they're awfully hip and neato. They are the bee's knees after all, and they like to listen to some of that rap music. And so the question was put, the vice president, Richard B. Dick, big time Cheney, Five Deaf Dick. You know, when you get a nickname like Five Deaf Dick, you could be a hip hop star in your own right. Five Deaf Dick says, we had Charlie Daniels not too long ago. Sarah Evans has been in. People like that. Then the question. No rap, followed by laughter. No rap, no. The country and Western is sort of a compromise between old folks, you know, the big band sound of the 50s and the rappers that the younger generation understands. I have trouble even following it. Nothing changes, does it? Nothing ever changes. I'd listen to some of that rock and roll music, but I can't understand a word they're saying. And all this yeah, 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 and whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't know what they're talking about. Can't understand nothing. I have trouble even following it. Yeah, and I'm ashamed of myself. I wish I had a really, really good piece of, wait a minute. Yeah, let me see what I can do here. Just for you. Just for you, Five Deaf Dick. Well, this is a cover, but it might still work a little bit. This going out to my peep, Dick Cheney, because he can't hardly follow none of it. Yeah. Here you go, Dick.
trouble even following it. I have trouble even following it.
Yeah, I imagine. I imagine you would have trouble following it, Dick. Wonder if you're going to be able to follow this.
What's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on.
You know, I have this mental image of Richard B. Dick, big time, five deaf Dick Cheney, just sitting in his vice presidential residence with his head in his hands, and his and that internal defibrillator of his just sort of beating this funky beat, and his wife, the pornographer, wanders by every now and then. Dick, are you okay? And he just keeps muttering,
I have trouble even following it. What's happened to this country? One of those is going to be president. Where's my country? Lynn, won't you put on some Charlie Daniels for me? Some of the late Charlie Daniels after he saw the light. None of that uneasy rider stuff back when he was all misguided and hippied up. Lynn, what's happened to our country?
Somebody bring me a pint of O positive. I need a fix. Cause really, that's what. What the hell? And yeah, that's right. These are some fun barbecues. They got tables that are wheelchair accessible, and they got attendants to hold the barbecue ribs. For the folks that can't hold them themselves because they got no arms left because they got sent off to the war that Dick started that we didn't have no business in. Yeah, I'm so glad he has barbecues. Hard to wipe that sauce off your chin without a hand to do it. What a four-square rat dope. Monster, inhuman monster. And of course, the monstrosity is proven by not just by Dick Cheney. The monstrosity is also proven by Michael Bolton. John Bolton. Yeah, one guy plays the sax, the other guy is a bloodthirsty monster. You'd think I could remember the difference, but no, John Bolton. He went up to the Royal Ontario Museum for the Monk debates on public policy earlier this month. And the question was put as to whether the international community should intervene in man-made humanitarian crises if the national governments involved fail to act. Well, the CEO of International Crisis Group, Gareth Evans, was there. Mia Farrow was there. They both argued that the international community has a duty and a responsibility to protect the most helpless. That, however, was not John Bolton's position, and this is one of those gotta-hear-it-to-believe-it kind of things.
Now, I recognize that the motives of those who advocate responsibility to protect is well-intentioned. And I respect those who believe in it as a doctrine. And I would simply say this to all of you, and I say it to you with respect. If you want to engage in humanitarian intervention, do it with your own sons and daughters, not with mine.
Damn! That takes some brass.
Do it with your own sons and daughters and not with mine. But on the other hand, if you want to rape a country that has not lifted a finger against the United States, well, John Bolton wants to do it with your sons and daughters and not with his. Because, see, brown-skinned people getting massacred and genocided in Darfur, no, not worth saving. On the other hand, slaughter a million or so people between the in the land between the rivers. Yeah, we can do that with your sons and daughters and not with his. Oh, sometimes I do want to live in that Warner Brothers world where pianos fall out of the sky, anvils, that kind of stuff. I may have to get some counseling or something. Rick Goodner, courtesy phone. Rick Goodner, courtesy phone. Because I can't, I'm just all disconnected and discombobulated right now. How do you get, really, I am, how do you get up in the morning knowing that you're a bloodthirsty warmonger who has repeatedly justified killing an entire country on a flimsy tissue paper series of lies and then say, nah, no humanitarian intervention, sorry. How does that mind work? Help me, Jesus. Because it just doesn't. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, hey, it's Sandra.
Sandra, help me.
I couldn't resist.
Help me, Obi-Wan, help me.
Listen, that Bolton thing, really, sharpshooter much? I'm sorry. that was outrageous. You know, I know I'm not supposed to be, you know, coming on air advocating some sort of violence, but man, you know, it's just the hubris. It's just stunning. And every time I hear that guy, I think about his days when he was prowling around New York sex clubs, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s.
Is that where the mustache came from?
Yeah, it's like porn mustache times two on that dude.
Yeah, and he used the entire United States as his own personal fluffer.
Well, yeah, that's for damn sure, because that comment was just completely uncalled for. He's foul, you know?
He's demonic.
It's just bizarre. These people really have no, and they're not going away, you know what I mean? It's just sort of, I guess he'll find some other platform, those think tanks to spew from, you know?
Sadly, you're right. I mean, they're gonna keep. I don't know what the next country is they're gonna want it. Well, yeah, I do too. Because what we're ramping up in Afghanistan come January.
Well, yeah, that's like some sort of nightmare deja vu from 1965, and it's like Obama, Johnson. I'm trying to interchange these fools. Sorry, I don't. You know, I know he ain't president yet, but he needs to check himself if he's gonna start building up Afghanistan. You know.
Well, you know,
it's not really the way to go.
Well, I thought he had it right when he said during the campaign that you can't just sit there and bomb weddings and expect that to be nation building.
Well, yeah, I don't, but no, but I got the impression that, you know, the sort of Neil Hawks demo style that he has surrounding himself, them people want to, they think, you know, building up in Afghanistan is the way to go. I don't know where they get that idea from, though. It's just bizarre.
Well, it's the persistence of this idea of winning. It's all I was going to say it's all just a football game, but it's not. There's a clock on a football game. This is like baseball extra innings or something. You know, sooner or later we're going to get that walk-off home run in some small country populated by brown folks, and then we're just going to feel real good.
And because the games are on so damn late, you know, they can just keep it going. Everyone's just going to go to sleep. You know what I mean? Because I don't really get it. I haven't heard, but is he really planning to extend the Afghanistan thing, or is that just talk? I mean, what have you heard?
Well, no, it's really happening in January, like 20,000 extra troops. Hello, Afghanistan.
They're going to bring them from Iraq, or are they going to send some poor fresh ones.
It's my understanding that they're being it's a combination of both. That people
poor people.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, just that people who were freshly out of Iraq, who get to come home and remember why they love their families and stuff, and why they'd like to see this over with, that they get to get rotated to good morning Kabul.
Yeah, I mean, but don't these people ever get a break from these tours?
No, they don't.
It's just so odd, and I'm assuming that there's going to be no come down from those private security people. I mean, they make a point of not even
come down. They're ramping up. They're going. Blackwater's going to work in the Gulf of Aden, right?
No.
Yeah, they're signing on for pirate protection. They're building their own little navy.
No, that's just an excuse for them to annihilate Somalia. That pirate stuff. Watch, they're going to be. Obama may be back in Somalia.
Want the ultimate irony? The U.S. Navy's there. The Japanese Navy's there. Various and sundry European navies are there. And guess who just came to the party? The Iranian Navy. Because even the Iranian Navy is pissed off when they start messing with the money.
Well, the piracy is just such a throwback. It's so interesting. I'm just like, I guess these sort of failed states, they'll go on that tip, too, because the piracy is hilarious. I'm sorry.
You're a great big tanker, and you pull to the side of the road for a couple of a Zodiac boat with a bunch of skinny guys in it who have AK-47s.
What? It's just... It is really.
I mean, some of those boats you could wipe out in the wake of a tanker.
Yeah, a wave should be able to do it. I know, I hear you, but in the meanwhile, they're still using that as a platform to, apply whatever military solution to that part of Africa.
Well, I forget who it was, but one of our exalted mucky mucks. It was Gates. It was Robert Gates. That went over to a piracy conference last week. Did you see this or hear about this?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, he went over to the piracy conference and told the shipping companies and so forth. He said, "Why don't you just tell your captains to speed up?" I wish I was lying to you. Speed up, outrun these dummies.
Oh, God. I mean, no, but that there's always some other agenda when you hear about these sort of things. So the pirate thing is like, what's really going on? And then you look at the Congo, that madness. Africa is just sort of, I don't know if the resource wars are ramping up or what's going on. But.
Well, sure it is. You don't want Africa as a continent becoming a stable place.
Well, no. You can't have that. I mean, that's what Sese was all about. But anyway.
Heck of a way to start a Monday, ain't it?
Well, no, but I mean, the Rick Warren thing. I thought I was going to spit out what I was drinking when you were talking about the Melissa Etheridge. Come on. Is that
Well, I have several of Melissa Etheridge's albums, and she is a rocker.
Yeah, some of my best friends are nignogs. Come on.
Yeah, see, that's what it is. Yeah, right.
I mean, and it's just sort of...
Some of my best friends listen to disco.
No, but to me, I'm like, this fool is going to darken the door of the Ebenezer Church. What's happening? What's going on?
Well, see, for me, that's another one of those the religion moments, Sandra. Because, I mean, the minute he set his hand on the wrought iron railing to go up the stairs, he'd be all grounded up, and the lightning would just shoot right through him.
Well, no, because it's just, and, poor Coretta, she must be spinning because, one of her kids is a homophobe, but she certainly wasn't. You know what I'm saying?
And that's probably part of the reason for this.
Well, yeah, that woman, I forget the woman's Renee, I forget which one it is, but she's foul. She was in Sacramento leading some sort of we hate gays rally here in the Capitol, and I was just like, oh no.
Sandra, I'm not calling on you to speak for a movement or anything, but you know, Dr. King's daughter there, she, you know, she makes the argument that, oh, no, gay marriage is nothing like our civil rights struggle. Where the hell does that come from?
I have no idea, because I just think it's out of a sort of warped conservative tradition like the rest of the conservatives. And people seem to think that just because it's black, you know, it should have some sort of, some sort of inherent understanding. But that's not really the case, because these conservative black folks are really no different than the Rick Warren folks on some levels.
I have heard it said, and you know, I got so much learning from Peter Godbold's show. I have heard it said that the gay black community is among the most at risk, that while basically heterosexist violence is a scourge on anybody who happens to be gay, that the problem is especially worse for men and women who are black and gay.
Another big problem with it is that it's hard for the gay black community to look at the gay whites put on their black face when they want their rights, because every other day they're still white. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so when it's time for them to get their rights, you know, it's just entitlement issues. You know, they're still white.
It's the privilege issues.
They're still white. So when it's time to get rights, they seem to think everyone should just roll over and get it. It's like, no, it don't work that way in the United States. You see, I know I may sound off, Bob. I don't mean
No, to, you don't. You don't. You know, you sound on's what you sound.
It's like, that's the issue that needs to be addressed if they want everyone to come to the table and help their cause. Now, this is a separate issue from King's daughter's homophobia. That's straight up whack. But the issue with the black gays, they have huge issues with the larger white community, which is the same as what black folks have with the larger dominant white community. There's no difference, you see. Now, if they want some coming together, there's issues that need to be addressed in the gay community of color that is ignored until Prop 8 pops up or something likewise. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But it just it makes me a little bit nuts.
No, it's all of it is nutty, because, you know, there should be several bridges, you know. For the way the whites turned on the black community after Prop 8 passed, that ain't going to go away. There's another wound open. You understand what I mean by that? That ain't cool.
No, it's
because
not.
Because the numbers didn't reflect that. There's only 2 million black people in California, and maybe 600,000 of them voted, and most of them voted against 8, yet the gay community turned on the numbers that they quoted for the black. I mean, it was just a mess. And that's, yeah, I don't even mean to go. I'm sorry I even went this way, but.
No. I understand what you're saying, and I'd like to get to the bottom of some of this. Because when we were talking last week, I had an email in from our buddy Marty, who said that, he and his uncle have worked tirelessly with his aunt, and that, you know, nope, she's still scared. You know, they're going to get her marriage.
Yeah. Oh no. And also the larger gay community, they didn't know how to reach out to the community of colors. You can't say the same for the right-wing community. They know how to reach out. Am I wrong?
No, well, no. The fact that Rick Warren is going to Ebenezer Baptist Church.
Exactly.
You know,
you were alluding to that earlier about how the right plans to keep their viciousness alive, and that's one way.
Well, this is an open door.
Mm.
This may be the one place where the right, you know, because you've had, oh, remember that billboard, and it came out in this last year, again, you know, Martin Luther King was a registered Republican, and the National Black Republican Campaign Committee and all of that stuff, they have floundered, Sandra, trying to figure out a way to siphon off what is otherwise a very solid Democratic voting bloc.
Well, no, but the thing is that, you know, they're not going to, you know, on some levels, especially after the last 8 years. I mean, whatever you want to, which is another reason why I was sort of disturbed by the Prop 8 thing, because whatever you want to say about the black community, that's one group that is a bit more with it when it comes to understanding the use of the vote, wouldn't you say?
You would hope, yes.
And it's just sort of, I don't know if, you know, I don't think at this point the Republicans are going to have a prayer ciphering off any of the black support. And the Latino support is falling away, too, because they see what the Republicans are about, too. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I don't know what, you know, and for him to go to that church, though, I'm not too sure.
Well, it's not just him going to that church, Sandra. It's him going to that church on Martin Luther King Jr. Annual Commemorative Day.
I'm shocked. You know, I didn't even know what to say.
I mean, is there anybody out there who maintains the fantasy that had it been possible, Rick Warren would have linked arms with those people who tried to the Edmund Pettus Bridge and the March from Selma? No, he would not have been there. No.
He would have been one of the preachers that King was writing to from the jail.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? No. It's mind-boggling how the revisionists have, like, taken over because, I guess the dead can't speak for themselves, and so we get to hear a whole different version. You know what I mean?
But this is minimalization is what I see it as, Sandra. This waters down. This doesn't lift up Rick Warren. This waters down Dr. King.
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it that way. I mean,
this is the further Santa Clausization of Martin Luther King.
Oh God, yeah, no, and it's just sort of, and you know, Obama support is only sort of propelling that along, you know. I mean, there were so many other reasons for him to say no, and this here is a really good example of why. I have to agree with you that it's astounding that his big ass is going to be speaking in that church. I can't even wrap my head around it.
Well, you know, I got an email just a couple of minutes ago from our buddy Jason saying the international community needs to intervene and shave off John Bolton's outdated 70s porn stash. I don't want it all the way shaved off, though. I want it down to the Charlie Chaplin part.
Yeah. Well, listen.
But while they're holding him down, they may as well hold down Rick Warren, so we can see exactly how much he looks like Jerry Falwell.
God, it's just. Oh, listen. This is another question I wanted to ask you right quick. What about that fool in that plane that crashed? Isn't that a bit?
Yeah, I got that in the stack for this evening.
Okay.
Yes. Stay off small aircraft. You know, this guy is a seasoned pilot.
Someone told him that. They gave him warning, too, apparently.
Yeah, but he's a seasoned pilot, and he goes up in a plane that allegedly has no gas in it? He ran out of gas? Come on.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh because it sounds hideous, but wow.
That's like Paul Wellstone's plane going down from icing in spring. Just,
oh, please.
No. You know, and I mean, they got Karl Rove. He's kind of on record threatening the man.
And his family, too.
But, you know, dead men tell no tales. This is the guy. I mean, he didn't just build, you know, he wasn't just this guy who built websites for Kent Blackwell.
Mm.
This is the guy who did the RNC email system where all of George's and Dick's and Carl's and everybody's emails just got lost.
No,
this is that guy.
Yeah, I know. And all of a sudden there's all these sort of, you know, hiccups with trying to transfer what the courts ordered them to transfer. I've noticed that. They're having problems with it.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember William Casey.
Oh, that poor bastard who had half his brain removed before he would talk?
Yeah, this is that.
Oh, God.
You know, William Casey may largely be said to be the reason, or the absence of William Casey, the reason that Ronald Reagan was not impeached.
No, it's that story is horrible, because he was ready to tell all, wasn't he?
That was the understanding.
And then all of a sudden, not only did he get hospitalized, they decided, oh, we're going to have to take out – half your brain too?
Yeah, I mean, he had head problems. Forced they were to amputate. Yeah.
Oh God.
I mean, but see, that's the thing, Sandra. This is what happens. Do not be a business associate of the Bush family. Just don't.
Well, no, because I mean,
Manuel Noriega, one day you're happily doing the pass-through stuff on the Bush cocaine biz, and the next day they're bombing your country and putting you on trial in Miami. Saddam Hussein, one day you think you got a nice business relationship, and the next day, you know, the next day you're dancing on air. You're doing the Spandau Ballet, if you will.
It's on and on.
It's not the family thing, but if you are a business associate of the Bush family and you don't have a lot on them in a safe that they can't find, you're dead.
Yeah. Well, who knows what may pop up from this dude, because this seems really sort of drastic. It's like, and so obvious. I'm sorry. And yeah, even the investigation is concerned about.
I mean, yeah, look down in Alabama. Look at that woman who dropped the dime on Karl Rove in the Don Siegelman case.
Oh, what happened to her?
Oh, Jesus, they ran her off the road. They burned her house. You know, one minute you're a good Republican operative, the next minute your morals kick in and you say something, and mommy, the house is on fire. Oh yeah, I mean, sure. And this,
well,
you know, this isn't the Clinton Chronicles, and I haven't said anything about MENA Airport. This isn't, and you know, nobody's shooting watermelons in the backyard to prove that anybody killed Vince Foster. These people just have a habit of getting dead when they cross the Bush family.
No, I'm still thinking about that woman in Florida who so-called killed herself, the madam.
Yeah, how many times did she have to, she hanged herself, didn't she?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, she probably had her hands tied behind her back.
Jump on the box, jump back down.
You know? Yeah, well, yeah, I don't really know, but I find that the plane crash thing really scary, and these people just circle the wagons. Who knows what's coming up next?
Stay off small aircraft. I mean, it would have been good advice for Buddy Holly, and it would have been good advice for this guy. Don't do it, because... I mean, I've got buddies who are private pilots, and I've been up with one of them. And there's this checklist, and you got the clipboard, and you check them all off, because you know it's not like when something happens on your car and you pull to the side of the road, because the road is 5 or 10,000 feet below you when it's an airplane. So you check off, does it work? Does it work? Check. Does it work? Check. Fuel in the tank. Check. And this guy was a veteran. I mean, he was an accomplished pilot. It's not like he was going up for his first solo.
I don't know. Maybe it was the airplane equivalent of getting in the bathtub and doing yourself in type of thing. I mean, who knows, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. What does Shakespeare call that? To play the noble Roman?
Yeah, that whole thing. And I always have visions of what's-his-face from The Godfather. He pulled one of those, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm just saying, maybe this is the airplane version of that. I mean, who knows, you know? Because wasn't that dude, did he testify or was he due to?
He was called to testify and tried to get around it. I believe he did actually. But the legal matters were ongoing. He wasn't done by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, this is ultra creepy. Sandra, good to hear from you, and I hope you have a wonderful Christmas or holiday.
Yeah, you too.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye. I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks Rick Warren going to the Ebenezer Baptist Church is super creepy. Hey, welcome to the program.
Super creepy from here, from my point of view.
Okay, just checking.
Ooh, I don't even want to jump into that stream. Hey, this is Kate. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm cold. It's really cold down here. I realized tonight when I got home from work that I'm dressed in my traveling road clothes when I'm in a cold place in my truck, when it's kind of got burr, it's cold. I've got several layers of special clothes that I wear. I put them all on tonight to sit here in my little.
And there is a dramatic difference between the cold of somewhere 4,000 feet above mean sea level and that bone-chilling, ass-biting cold that comes in off over water.
Yeah, it's not far from the water, and it's pretty nippy, and it was about 20 this morning, wind chill, but it ain't 25 below, and I'm not complaining. However, people are talking about, you know, I hear people making snide remarks about, this is global warming, ha, ha, ha. Well, it never was global warming. It's climate change, and it's been predicted for over 10 years that the jet stream's going to hit the deck, and when it does, I mean, it has been, and I mean, it comes down, it swoops down deeper than it usually used to, you know,
mm-hmm.
And these people were chastised and made fun of and ostracized in their community and the researchers and everything, you know, and now it's happening, and people just aren't prepared, you know, and it makes me really sad for all the folks that are going to suffer this, the elders and the poor and the disenfranchised and the homeless and, you know, the people and people who aren't prepared for living in an ice storm and they don't have power for 48 days. You know, they get cold. And
well, did you see what happened in the Pacific Northwest this past weekend?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen in Portland.
No.
What happened up there, biblical proportions, at least
mm-hmm.
of late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we used to have some pretty severe storms up in Seattle, but they were like freak storms. And, you know, but this.
When the freaks blew in?
Yeah. This freak stuff is happening more often. And so, you know, I mean, I just would encourage people to shift their perspective and view this as climate change, because the climate's changing all over the planet. And if we aren't prepared for that, it's going to be pretty icky for a lot of people. So, you know, it's been kind of on my mind all day because I've got a lot of people up north where the jet stream dropped and the Alberta Clipper blew in and the big Arctic storms and it's just like this big band across the top of the country, and it's pretty sad for me because a lot of them just weren't prepared for this, especially in December. And anyway, I wanted to plug into what you guys were just talking about, or what I don't know if it was you and Sandra or you, about what something's going on like behind the curtain. And I can't remember if I called in or emailed you last week or someplace I've said this, but just about the time that Warren came on to the scene and caused this big flap in the whole country.
Yeah, you wondered what it was distracting from.
What I did say that, okay. Because about that time, the Illinois mess started. And they knew that was coming, and how much mess Rahm had made, and how much involved Obama is, and something's going on somewhere that this Warren thing is just going and going, and we're being goaded and goaded and pushed, and it's just being, we're just being niggled at with this thing, and it isn't, I mean, it's very important. Don't get me wrong, but it's something is going on. And then, as I was going to talk about, yeah, and now we're invading Somalia again and deploying troops, and the UN doesn't want to go, and they are, and then NATO want, you know, it's just something's going on. I mean, I'm just connecting the dots, and something's going on behind the curtain that we're being distracted from by this Warren thing. It's pretty freaky, and I just don't understand it. I guess we'll just have to wait it out and see what's going on.
No, I don't know. You know, there's a bunch of cracks in the Magic 8 Ball, but it's not. I mean, when you know, I saw those comments you sent, Kate, and they're valid.
I was talking to you. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you were.
Sorry if I repeat it. Just let me know, and I'll.
No. This makes perfect sense because. On the one hand, I feel like it's a failure on my part because there's so blooming much news and so little time to wedge it all into.
Yeah.
There's a story. I forget what magazine, what periodical, or what print outlet it came from on worldwide slavery.
Oh yeah.
And I've got the notion that maybe somewhere along the way in the next couple of days we probably ought to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, being Americans, we look around and well, no slavery here. I guess we don't have a slavery problem.
Not even in our own United States, no.
Meanwhile, human beings are really honest-to-God trafficked in, bought and sold,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the sex trade or whether it's a part of the globalization economic miracle whereby, you know, one day you were working in the farm and the famine came and you went to the big city and the next thing you know, you're chained to a table in a sewing factory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know what went down in the Northern Marianas Protectorate. We know what Tom DeLay had to do with that. We know about the wage structure. We know that people were forcibly prostituted who came to the Northern Marianas from other places in the Pacific Rim. There are beaucoup de things to talk about. I don't know, Kate, if there's one thing that's being covered up, because I don't want to minimize anybody's issues.
No.
There were a lot of gay people who busted their asses for Barack Obama, and this really is spitting right in their face.
Oh yeah, it's just beyond words. It's so big. That's why I suspect that there's something else going on, because it's like the false flag.
Well, look at the environmentalists, and you know, I don't even like that word. That makes it sound like we're involved in preserving the environment. No, humanists. Well, that's kind of taken too.
We're not
out there hugging trees for the trees' sake. We're hugging the trees because no trees know us.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of environmental folks who, again, busted their asses to see Barack Obama elected, and we get Ken mm-hmm. Salazar.
I am so disappointed. I said it way bigger than that and a little more profane. It was just
yeah, and there was a the and another word and.
Yeah. Yeah, that creep from Colorado. I mean, that faux Democrat. Oh God, never mind. Anyway, we're in the interest of time, because I want to hear your stacks. They sounded pretty interesting tonight. The economy. I smiled last night, kind of sadly, in my sleep. I don't know what I was. Oh, I know. I was listening to. I wanted to hear some weather, and I was listening to Cincinnati Trucker Network, and. He was talking about some of the rest area, some of the economy in some of the states that are taking such a hit are closing up their rest areas. And in one particular place at milepost so-and-so, they're losing 40 trucking spot, parking spots for trucks to park overnight, you know, in rest areas. I think he said at this point they're closing down 6 in Indiana, rest areas on the interstates. And I think there were more than that in Ohio, and I thought, well, yeah, they've closed some in New Mexico, and you just can't. My zip code, my list of zip codes is changing drastically. I mean, all we need now is for the Sam's Club and the Walmarts to start closing up their lots to overnighters, and that's going to change my cake from everywhere considerably. I got no place to live. Bang. But as out of chaos comes some order, I mean, that something else will turn up. I mean, there'll be, they never, I never get myself painted into a corner. Some other place to park will come up. Can't do it in churches anymore. The security comes around and makes you move and wants to, they call the cops and stuff. So anyway, just think about all the people who are homeless who live in rest areas. If they're closing the rest areas, it's just the homeless place, it's people in their cars who have full-time jobs, by the way. But they're only about 7.5 hours a day, so they can't ever save enough money to get a deposit for first and last and pets and kids and, you know, utilities. And so people are living in rest areas who have full-time jobs and, you know, that whole subculture out there. And I just thought that's one more. This is sort of borders on the Mad Max thing, you know, that it kind of borders on, my God, what's it coming to? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Whatever. But sadly, fuel is down to $1.46 right around the corner from my house.
And no kidding. We're still doing $1.90.
Well, that makes me, but $1.46, somebody's going to pay for that. I mean, this is sad. It's very scary. It shouldn't have gone down that fast.
Well, look, you know, when
stability.
No, because wait, Kate. We started talking all. You know, the whole country started talking all of a sudden about hybrids and plug-in electric vehicles.
That's right.
We started talking about that, and ExxonMobil said, "Whoa, stop it."
Yeah, that's right. And they dropped the prices, and now I heard a phenomenal number of ethanol plants are going bankrupt. I mean, they put the skids on all kinds of alternative fuel and transportation. I mean, the gas prices started falling out. People are back on the road. They're driving their bigger vehicles now. All the scooters and motorcycles are gone. It might be winter, but not necessarily down here. You know, I mean, it just, there's a noticeable difference in the traffic flow, the patterns, and the vehicles.
Hey, Marlene, let's go drive around in circles. That's $1.46 gasoline is.
That's right. Let's go fill up again. This is cool. You know, we never thought we'd ever see this again. It freaks me out. Every time I'd see the gas prices drop, I'm thinking, ooh, but this is scary. We're paying for this someplace. And then when I heard that the ethanol plants were going bankrupt, I said, see, that's what I meant. And for the sake of time, I have a Dixie for Dummies question again. I shared the glorified grits story that you guys all walked me through so gently.
It goes great with it. It's a side dish. Remember, it goes with the spoon eggs.
That's why. Oh, don't start with the spoon eggs. What is it? What the hell is it with Ritz crackers down here?
Well, Andy Griffith told us about 25 years ago that everything's better that sits on a Ritz.
Oh, well.
Good cracker. Good cracker.
Somebody brought in this beautiful tray of confectionery kind of stuff. It had some chocolate dip bonbon looking things, and it had some cookies that I just really hoped that they had mincemeat in them, like real mincemeat. They didn't. I don't know what it was. It was a Snickers, little big bite of Snickers bar baked into the cookie or something. I don't know.
Snickerdoodle.
It was a real disappointment. I wanted it to be mincemeat, real mincemeat, you know, like Grandma used to make.
Well, yes, and you want to go around the corner and buy a goose with old Uncle Scrooge, too. I understand, but...
I don't know about that. They were talking about... he went to pick up the... And I said, what? And she said it again, and I said, oh. And then I asked later, what was she saying? And it was the turkey with the duck with the chicken.
Oh, the turducken.
Oh, my. Anyway, the Ritz crackers thing, I ate one of these things that was covered with really nice Hershey's-looking chocolate, and it was crunchy, and it was kind of good, and I ate another one later on in the afternoon with a cup of coffee, and I thought, what is this? And I opened it up and took chocolate off and opened it. It was a Ritz cracker with peanut butter in between the two Ritz crackers, and then it was dipped in Hershey milk chocolate, and I thought, this is so freaking Southern.
I don't know if that's Southern or not, Kate.
But they use Ritz crackers for everything, I don't know who they are. I just
caught yourself, didn't you? Those people.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Those people. You can't take the Ritz crackers away from those people.
The watermelon and the, oh God.
Don't
go there. And you know those little crackers that are in the trays on your table, the little oblong things that look like, those green, in the green box,
Club?
Anyway, the club crackers, right. There's a certain brand of club crackers down here.
Captain's wafers.
Huh?
Captain's wafers.
Okay, yep. If you take it out of the package and squeeze lemon juice, fresh lemon juice from your tea onto the cracker and eat it, it tastes just like lemon pie.
Get out.
I said, oh, yeah, get out of here. They do. Oh, my God.
You are in a culinary wonderland.
When I want lemon pie, I just go get those little crackers and squeeze. I go to the right restaurant, and you just squeeze the lemon juice on them, and you got lemon pie for dessert. It goes right good after the oysters.
Oh, the oysters.
Well, anyway, so the Ritz cracker, you know, I mean, this is the Dixie for Dummies segment. I just wondered what the Ritz crackers thing is about and if it's cultural or if it's just an anomaly.
Well, you know, I remember years back they used to hustle some a famous Ritz recipe for something called mock apple pie.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'd heard of that, but I don't think I've ever eaten it. But
yeah, it was apple pie with no apples in it.
Oh.
it was crumbled up Ritz crackers.
And with a little bit of
lemon juice and something or another.
Oh, well, see, you can make crackers and lemon juice mix. Apple pie or lemon pie. Oh, my God. Oh, well, okay.
It's all in the juice.
If the lemons are from Florida, Mexico, Australia.
Chile.
Yeah, I had a sad thing happen. I'm glad I don't celebrate the season, the slavery thing. I thought about your kids saying, can we have fireworks? And then you tell them about the kids chained to the tables. I witnessed a big mess of toys being purchased for about the tune of $700 for some kids who don't have any Christmas. And I thought, and they all came from Wally World, and I thought about all the kids who worked in those factories who were enslaved and exploited, who made all those toys so these little punks down here could have Christmas.
Well, see, and that's I've seen it's a staple of publishing and local newspapers. Well, the Sensitive Humanitarian Association, led by Mrs. Frances Garstenberg, is going to make Christmas for a lot. We'll make sure that a lot of children have Christmas this year by bringing it blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always, you know, that somebody's going to get toys.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And these are usually Christian organizations, okay?
Yeah.
And that just goes through me like a dose of salt.
Yeah, it makes me really sad. I just
that way. No, the phraseology, the English, because I'm so stinking obsessive compulsive about language. That you know, when I hear that this year they'll have Christmas thanks to the generosity of others.
Right.
If you buy,
I had Christmas once in 1952.
I know, but
well,
but if you buy into this myth system. If you buy into the idea of you know, Christ was born of a virgin and, you know, all that stuff in the Apostolic Creed, then toys don't define having Christmas now, do they?
Not really.
No.
Jesus.
And, you know, I was reflecting on something with the kids. You know, they teach me as much as I teach them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were reflecting on the history of St. Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
And just as we have argued that Jesus was a person of color, so too probably was Saint Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because what I mean, wasn't he from, you know, the area that we know as Turkey, Armenia, all that? I mean,
mm-hmm.
He probably at the very least had a pretty damn good tan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. He couldn't pass. That's for damn sure.
Right. No blue. No, yeah, there were no merry twinkling blue eyes.
The beard could have been white, but the eyes.
No, you got to be Clement. You know, it was Clement Moore that turned him into this white, jolly, little bearded fat guy. Nobody else before then, really.
Mm-mm.
And he really, you know, he really did wear a red fur trimmed suit. But it's not because he lived at the North Pole, for heaven's sakes. It's because he was a bishop in the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would, you know, that because, you know, catch him on any given day, the old Wehrmacht anti-aircraft gunner sitting on the Sea of St. Peter in Rome, that dude wears a red dress with fur trim too.
Mm-hmm. And high heels.
The only thing is he doesn't give toys to good little children. He takes condoms away from good mommies and daddies so that their children can die of AIDS.
That's right.
In Africa.
So we can have more slaves.
Ooh-wee, you can't beat that compassion.
Uh-uh, no, that's with the big C. Yeah, anyway, well, I want to hear the rest of your stacks, and I want to thank Ed for, I happened to be listening the other night when I heard him say that I sound like Mother Jones, and I thought, ooh-wee, buddy, I got to get busy. I ain't mother enough. I doing nearly enough.
Yeah, but she lived, Kate, she lived into her 90s.
I know. I
mean, they were putting her in prison in Clarksburg, West Virginia, when she was in her 80s.
84, I think.
Yeah, you got time to work on it.
Oh, God, deliver me from 90. Oh, Jesus, I don't want to go there. Can if I just hurry, because she was the most dangerous woman in America, and if I hurry, I can do that. I don't want to be 90, okay? I almost don't want to be 65, but, hey, there you go. I'm just, shut up here. I was.
Oh, by the way, Waverly Wafers. Waverly Wafers are the ones. Yeah, those are the ones you're talking about. The sweet little crackers.
Yeah. Waverly things.
Waverly Wafers.
The club cracker things. Yeah, and you put lemon juice on them, and they make lemon pie. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So anyway, I got work to do to go be the most dangerous woman in America. So, but not without all them zip codes up and down the road. I gotta make concessions for the failing economy in all those states and see what we can do. We got to find these people who live in their cars more places to live.
Well, you know, you're right. You talk about people living in their cars and so forth. That's one thing I have not seen in the run-up to this inauguration, and I want, by God, I want coverage of this. I want to know what D.C. is doing with its homeless folk for the inauguration.
Oh.
Because, you know, lately the trend, whether you be Beijing or L.A. or any other city, is you hustle them at Atlanta. Oh my God! It was like a diaspora of homelessness for the Atlanta Olympics. I want to know where D.C.'s homeless folk are.
I heard somebody make it. Might have been on Mark Thompson on satellite on Sirius. I've heard a bit about this, and I'll keep digging around. But they a lot of people are moving into shelters and. Into their squatting and stuff, so they're not going to be so obvious on the streets in the wintertime because it's damn cold up there now.
You're darn right. It was 17 degrees here today, and that's without the wind blowing.
That's right.
It blew in here so hard last night, whipping around the house. I looked out the window halfway expecting to see some cranky green woman on a bicycle in the air.
Just leave the witches out of this, okay? Just we're not, or she could come get you.
Right. And Lottie's telling me that the homeless folks are being bused to Virginia.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say that, but I can't substantiate that, so I don't have a source.
That's going to work out nicely because they're going to love them in the Old Dominion.
Up there where you live, before the trouble started.
Right. I got an aunt in Roanoke.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I want to hear the rest of your stats, and so get on with it, and I'll are you on the air Friday?
You know, I'm thinking probably not.
Oh.
Although I may break down and just do it. It depends, because that's Ferg's birthday.
Oh. Well, let him come in and co-host.
Don't egg the boy on, Kate. I'm already getting that. Dad, I want to direct.
Well, why wouldn't you encourage talent?
Well, I am.
Exploit creativity.
But we are. But see the trouble you make.
A half an hour. God, you give some of your callers an hour and 10 minutes. Well, me, you know, you give me all this time. Why don't you give him 15 damn minutes?
All right, we'll think about this.
Okay. You could even give him some telling. I mean, I want to hear what's going on.
See, this family suffers from congenital word vomit.
I understand.
And the trick is learning to control it.
You don't need to control his creativity. He could just come on, and if he had an agenda and some stacks, and I'd like to hear.
Now, see, your mother jonesing me is what you're doing, Kate, because see, I got a little rebellion going in the chat room now. Let him do it, Bob. I second that.
Oh, I'm not reading the chat room. I don't even know if it's still on my computer. I think I would like to hear about his school and how it compares to what he knows about places going on around the country, and how's he making accommodations or concessions for not being taught good English, let alone another language, and is he learning anything at home, and how is it to be tutored at home by by all of you and his sisters and, you know, and what's it like in sports and, you know.
All right, well, we can work on that.
What's it like to be, how old is he going to be? I forget.
He's going to be a teenager.
He's 13.
Yeah.
You should farm that boy out.
Oh, and the voice is dropping.
Put him in a home. They're horrible.
What?
But 13-year-olds are the awfulest people on the planet.
Yeah, and he's got one behind him going to be 12 in March.
Yeah. They hate you. They hate themselves. They hate the world, everything. I mean, oh, my God. Oh, we should double up the contributions and give you a ticket to run away from home.
or at least finish out the studio outbuilding so I can go hide.
There you go. Well, anyway, it would be good to hear him, like, give him at the bottom of the first hour, just have him, you know, do your stacks and then have him come on and do some, what does he want to talk about? You know, what does the audience want to hear about?
Right now, I'm guessing what he wants to talk about is this really, really cute little blonde girl. But I don't want to, no, he'd blush if he knew. Yeah, he's got it bad.
Yeah, don't even do that. Don't even do that publicly. That's an awful thing for you.
But he's not listening.
Oh, well, he might be.
No,
you might get into the archives.
Well, no. But no, honest to God, that's all he talks about these days.
No, tell him we're not interested in
it's
that.
It's like that scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian. Sex is all you ever think about. Is it too big? Is it too short? Will the girls like it? This is, of course, after Brian has said, "Have I got a big nose, Mum?"
Yeah. Well, he's far more articulate than that, and I, you know, he could put his hormones aside for a while and talk to the audience.
Oh, he's working on his George Bush voice. He's getting real good at it. I said, "Son, you're a little late. Work on the Obama voice."
We could, that's creepier than ever. He could also take calls, a couple, three questions, or some emails. Some people could email in some questions, and he could talk on that, you know?
Well, he will be, now, all kidding aside, he will be here Wednesday night. And so will Margie, and so will Doodle.
What's Wednesday?
Well, we're gonna do the on-air reading of the Christmas story.
Oh, okay. Oh. Mikey does that with Molly, too. That's Christmas Eve, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, how cool is that? All right.
And probably the reading of the great Truman Capote story, A Christmas Memory.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good on you. We're just sitting here babbling family stuff, and we could be doing gold.
But that's what this is about. But, Kate, thank you so much, and I'll never look at a Waverly Wafer the same way again.
Put lemon juice on it. You got a good piece of pie.
I'm gonna.
This is Dixie from Dummies.
Kate, take care, dear.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And let's keep things rolling merrily along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, before I get in the story that I called about,
yeah.
I think you know which one it's going to be. I had I actually gave a recipe of gumbo that I found from my mom, and she sent it to someone, and we had an experience of gumbo terrorism, because they said, you ever heard of this one? Can't mix shrimp with sausage in a gumbo. No. And he went on and on and on. He was so animated by it, Bob. He's from, he lives in, I believe, Korea. And he was like, he's an expat. So, And he sent us all of this gumbo material, and I just wondered if you've ever heard of that before.
Now, which part?
He said you can't put sausage and shrimp in the gumbo.
What?
That's what he said. Apparently, this is a part in the South. See, this is a thing where
which
you know,
part?
He was talking just completely, and he had this whole long theory and why his family didn't do it, and it's insanity. When you think about it,
basically, you know, gumbo is po folks food.
I know, but
and you put what you got. But I mean, you can ham, fish, chicken, shrimp, oysters, whatever.
When you talk about food and when people are really passionate about food and
it can get red real fast.
regional areas, I mean, you start to get delusional and you start to think, well, you can't mix this and that. No, you can't.
No, see, I got under Rick Goodner's skin the other day about, you know, no sugar in the cornbread. You know, and he straightened me out on the air. I guess it was Friday. Yeah. Bob, you only put enough sugar in there to make sure you get a pretty golden pop.
No, but I thought that was so insane. No shrimp and sausage and a gum. I mean, I'm not from the South, and I'm like, why not? Even I could figure that
out. You'd get taken up a bayou and fed to a gator in some parts for saying that.
I guess, you know what? This is a whole show. What is acceptable in the different states for gumbo? I bet you we would be more surprised than ever.
You know, I hadn't made a good pot in a while, and I've been thinking I got to, and I will real soon. And when we do, you know, whatever you've got for flavoring, that's the whole thing. It is poor people's food. And you know, if you got some fish chunks or some shrimp or some, depending on where you live, you know, chunk the meat off of an old ham bone, cook the ham bone in. Now save the ham bone for the soup beans. But you know, that's the way it is with poor folks' food.
I guess I look at it different when I don't call it poor people's food. I just call it, you know, sustenance and.
Well, no, but it really is poor folks' food, David, because it's the cuts. It's stuff that you make out of the cuts of meat that the well-heeled and the well-to-do don't want.
Mm.
You know that they don't deem to be yummy enough for their delicate palates. So, you know, necessity being the mother of invention, and creativity being the soul of hard times, you make something fabulous out of it. Oh, I mean, you know, red beans and rice that is so revered now, again, poor people's food. And all of this stuff, you can find some restaurant somewhere that will charge you $30 for a bowl of it.
Mm.
I mean that's the way the cycle works. In it, most of the great cooking now, or a great deal of the great cooking, is nothing more than the adoption of classic regional foods that were, you know, done out of necessity.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
No shrimp in gumbo? That's nuts.
That's what I said, too. No, they said you couldn't mix shrimp and sausage, and I thought that was insane. But this guy, I'm going to have to get my parents to send you the letter just to see, show you how crazy it is.
Yeah, I got to see this.
Forward it to you, and you'll see. But, yeah, the thing I really meant to call about, that's what just jolted me right there. The thing I meant to call was about, you know, the Bush family's going to have to put a mixtape out on the streets now since this Mike McConnell crash. I mean, first of all, you know what no one's talking about? Here's the first thing that came to mind. I followed the story as soon as it hit the wire. Huffington Post had it on the front page, and they buried that. They buried it, Bob. They just moved it. Around and around, even the posters on, if you go in the comments section, they're like, why did you bury this story? This is important. Huffington Post even got scared. What does that tell you?
It tells me a lot. Among other things, I imagine that a place like Huffington Post is concerned to some degree or another, David, of credibility. And if you start talking about this stuff too much, what they'll do is they'll say, oh, you're probably one of them 9/11 truthers.
Yeah,
you're a conspiracy theorist.
That's what I thought instantly. Did you see the update on a raw story regarding the plane crash?
No.
Apparently, he was warned that his plane was going to be sabotaged. It just gets better and better.
Merciful God.
I have two theories. One theory is that he knew the plane was sabotaged, and he did himself in because he was getting threats from his family on his phone.
Right, we know where you live, we know where your kids go to school, that kind of stuff.
But, Bob, for God's sake, I don't understand why people still don't do this. When you're in contact with a witness, send them a damn tape recorder or do a podcast on the air.
Yeah, he is survived by his wife, Heather, and their four children. Well, there's five reasons to go up and drain your tanks.
Do you know how cold-blooded it is to do it a week before Christmas, though? I don't care. That's not a coincidence. Give me a break.
No, this is not a boating accident.
this is not a boating accident. We're not going to need a bigger conspiracy because this one pretty much has.
Oh, you picked that one right up. I'm so proud.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at it. Anyways, I don't know if you noticed this, but I want to read parts of this because this gets us into Mike Connell's mind. It's a company Christmas card.
Yeah.
Put out. And I was reading it on a message board, and I thought it was relevant, especially what Mike Connell's psyche is. I feel bad for him, Bob, because I realized that this guy is. It's one of those lines of ideology where you cross the Rubicon and you can't go back. And if you believe in something so much, it's like Santa Claus. You're gonna keep waiting for Santa, even though he'll probably never show. So anyways, here's parts of the card that got me. In spite of the longest, most drawn-out presidential contest this nation has ever witnessed, and I feel it, to work that long and hard just to suffer such a disappointing outcome at the polls is frustrating. Actually, only one of our general election candidates or ballots initiatives lost, but when it's atop of the ticket, it still tings, still stings. I want to take nothing away from the historical significance of electing the first African-American president, but with that said, Barack Obama is against practically everything for which I stand. Moreover, it saddens me to see so many Americans who bought the package candidate sold to them without even bothering to really study his politics positions. At times like these, it is important to maintain perspective. I just want to say one thing to that.
Meat pot.
Meat pot, exactly.
Yeah, prepackaged candidate.
That's when you really have... He was there so long, and his mind and his family probably indoctrinate him so much in believing. But one of the things he keeps saying, now keep in mind, this is a damn company Christmas card. Who the hell does this stuff who has a guilty conscience?
Yeah, for heaven's sakes, you know, lay off, right, sure.
Right, and he just keeps going. He says, in our 230-year history, our democracy has suffered worse fates. It's just that none come to mind right now. Are you kidding me?
None come to mind?
I know. When I read that, I was like, what? But we shall... this is what I'm talking about. I have a friend who is just like this, and I realize it's a poison. It's a toxic. You chose the red pill when you should have chose the blue pill. Pun intended. You take it. But we shall survive this, and it will make us stronger. After all, we had to suffer 4 years of Jimmy Carter to get Ronald Reagan, right? Again, this is a company Christmas card, for God's sake.
Dear Lord.
The fact remains. Now, this is what we were talking about. This ties the vote, Bob. This is why I wanted to tell you about this card, because this ties it back to Rick Warren. This ties it to the greater good. The fact remains, sometimes God gives us the government we deserve. The road ahead is a tough one. And we need to be ready to dig in and fight and preserve and protect our country from short-sighted, feel-good policies.
Oh, there's another one of those pot kettle moments.
Yeah, I know, whose unintended consequences threaten to undermine the liberties we enjoy. But it is the tough times that determine our character and allow our true colors to shine through. This is just a moment in time, and this too shall pass. Now here's where it goes into O'Reilly World or Sean Hannityville. Enduring is the fact that 2,000 years ago, and Rick Warrenville, a babe was born in Bethlehem. When our Lord God sent his only son for our salvation, and he capitalizes, that was an event that changed the course of history. And then he winds it down by saying, in spite of the current economic and political conditions, salvation is eternal. So it's important to put our political and philosophical differences aside and really celebrate this season for what it truly represents. Slow down, unplug, and relax. Take the time to truly appreciate the most joyous of seasons and what it truly represents. Merry Christmas, Michael. Do you know how insane that is? Do you know how insane that is? Because the beginning...
Oh, Margaret. Yeah.
But the beginning, imagine if Michael Connell was a Democrat and he was talking about an Islamic holiday.
Sure.
I mean, we would never hear the end of it. Or if Michael was black and he was a Democrat, and he was talking about Kwanzaa, and he put it in these perspectives.
You wouldn't. Rush Limbaugh would do 6 hours every day over it.
You know what really got me was the fact that he says we need to put our political and philosophical differences aside. But at the top of the damn Christmas card, he was going to talk about how I can't think of a worse event that is going to have happened to our nation. Merry Christmas to everyone.
We're screwed. Pass the gravy.
Did you see what Larissa? She's freaking out, and she's completely in her right mind to do that. But did you see her long post on atlargely.com?
No.
She was like, and I don't mean this in any way that this was a murder, that this was deliberate,
but
that this is a conspiracy. No. She just kept going on, and then she said, Mike did. He was going to fly to D.C. I mean, she skated around it so fast. The fact that she couldn't, I don't blame her. She can't.
Well, look,
well,
here's the bottom line, okay? Yeah. These are the words of Cliff Arnebeck, the lead attorney in the King Lincoln Bronzeville Neighborhood Association versus Blackwell.
Yeah.
This is from the letter he sent to U.S. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, who, by the way, remember how he passed out at the podium a few weeks back?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He must have gotten, he probably got well because he agreed to play ball. Anyway, this letter was sent to Michael Mukasey seeking protection for Michael Connell as a witness in the case, the King Lincoln Bronzeville versus Blackwell.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is what Arnebeck wrote. This is a direct quote. We have been confidentially informed by a source we believe to be credible that Karl Rove has threatened Michael Connell, a principal witness we have identified in our King Lincoln case in federal court in Columbus, Ohio, that if he does not agree to take the fall for election fraud in Ohio, his wife Heather will be prosecuted for supposed lobby law violations. Gun meets smoke.
Oh. You know what just played in my mind? The opening the notes of Mark Snow, composer for X-Files.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right. Well, you know what goes through my mind is the Erwin Rommel taking that little car ride, and eating the barrel of a 9mm pistol because they, you know, listen, we know you're in on the plot. Even if Tom Cruise has completely ruined everything with that heroic story, we know you were in on the plot to kill the Fuhrer, and here's the deal. One, you can go with us and blow your brains out, and we'll give you a hero's funeral, and your kid will live, and your wife.
Yeah.
Or you can not do that, and we'll arrest you and try you as a traitor and kill you and your family. You pick.
You know, one of the things that this all ties into, and which is going to, I mean, if I was a Hollywood producer, oh, I'd be so getting the movie.
You know, what was the fly-in weather like on the 19th of December? You know, that neck of the Ohio woods.
You know, it goes back to the fact that his friend, the updated story where it says his friend said, don't fly your plane, it may be sabotaged, and he told him two times. And then the fact that, you know, he didn't tell anyone he was going to D.C. Come on now. He didn't tell anyone he was going to D.C. He just said, yeah, I'm just going to go out of Washington, D.C. right now. Maybe go visit some of the...
There's a great little joint on Vermont Circle. I got a hankering for $7 cocktails and some killer wings. Yeah.
There's an RNC convention. Yeah. Quickly before I head off, one thing I wanted to say was two things. You know, for great Christmas music, no one really has paid attention to these, but I think they're pretty impressive. Is Sufjan Stevens has about like about 16 or 17 different elaborate type of Christmas multi-tracking recordings that he's done. And to me, Sufjan Stevens is like I don't know if you're familiar with any of his work, but
no, you've dropped a new name on me.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't mention the name before, but what makes him interesting is the fact that all of his albums right now, he's doing one for each state, so he might do one for West Virginia when he comes around to it. That's his game plan. He did Michigan. He did Illinois. And so what he does is he takes some of the pop cultural significances and he puts it in. And he has a song about John Gacy. And what makes him really interesting is the fact that he incorporates a lot of string orchestrations with clawhammer banjo and glockenspiels and choirs and stuff.
Oh, wow.
He's a really interesting guy. But, yeah, I would check out – I'll try to send you his Christmas material so he can play it on the air. I think it's really fantastic stuff. And, he's an important one to look for. And then on the issue of Somalia, there's a great MC by the name of Kanan, who's from Somalia, and he has a good video out right now about Somalia, and it's kind of like a storytelling song, and it's really impressive as well. But then the other thing I wanted to mention on the music side, since I'm going to close it off with that, is the fact that no one's talking about this, and this is a damn shame. But people really need to get on their ball about this, and I would love for you to interview this guy, but have you heard about this Playing for Change thing?
No.
Well, apparently this guy, who I guess is in the music industry, was listening to a street musician 10 years ago. This is a great story because it came to fruition after 10 years. And he said, as he was walking by on the subway in New York, he said, "What would that song sound like?" And I guess he was listening to Stand By Me. He said, "What would that song sound like if you combined all of the street and the folk musicians from around the world and you tracked them all together doing this song and you recorded each location?"
Oh, wow.
So what he did was, and there was actually a segment on Bill Moyers. So he actually did go around the world, and he went to Africa, he went to India, he went to California, Venice Beach, he went to New York, and he would set up the microphones, and he found the people that were to put it together and harmonize on the records, and the melodies, and they put it all together, and I guess they have an album out called Playing for Change. I bet you can go to the website playingforchange.org or something.
Oh, cool. I will.
And, yeah, I would check it out, and I would definitely play Stand By Me. I think it's relevant. And one last thing before I go. I know we said this is my punchline joke for all those people who are waiting for it. I know we said that Obama is Obi-Wan, but I'm beginning to think – no, because I have the perfect character in mind for Barack Obama. And if I offend some of you Barack fans, I don't intend to, but it's not an offense anyways. I think of Barack Obama as Han Solo.
Well, at least you didn't say, well, never mind.
No, I didn't say that. I'd say Joe Biden is Chewbacca because he doesn't say anything. He's in the background.
But Joe Biden says plenty.
Oh, yeah, he says plenty. I mean, he says it, but, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention.
He'll be C-3PO within a year of the administration.
I could have said Barack Obama was Lando, but...
Well, see, that's what I expected.
He didn't have too much of a backstory, so he had to go with Han Solo. So I think Obama has chosen the mercenary route, and I wouldn't be surprised if you had the Millennium Falcon parked right next to the White House.
Oh, we're working this analogy hard now, David.
Yeah, but you know what? Maybe if we're lucky, we can get George W. Bush and Dick Cheney carbonized and send them to Jabba the Hutt.
Now, see, I'm okay. Yeah, in carbonite, absolutely.
Yeah, carbonite. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, to me, again,
get George frozen in carbonite right in that position where he's dodging the shoe.
Right.
You know, with that wide-eyed thing going on. Now, see, this is where video we're failed by the lack of video. That bug-eyed, huh? Wait, hey. Yeah.
I think that's
get Dick frozen in carbonite right as he's saying,
I can't even understand the words of that rap music.
Yeah, with the smirk on his face, it would be priceless. And Jabba the Hutt, I know we can get a good price for it. And you know what? Maybe we won't need a bailout for him. Maybe the bounty on Dick Cheney. I'm guessing they've done some damage throughout the galaxy.
One of the Bush twins, like with the leash on, standing next to Jabba in the Princess Leia thing. Yeah,
exactly. Oh. But then my other idea was, since the Bush administration want to be gangsters, and they want to create quite a stir of fear and terror, maybe there's some way we can get the Bush administration to have a feud with the Triads and Yakuza. I don't think they'd stand a chance, Mom.
East Coast, West Coast, you know.
Oh, like you know, that would, I mean, that's a, like I said, the movie rights to the Mike O'Connell story, people, if you're a screenwriter, run.
Option the story now.
Russell Crowe is Mike Connell. There you go.
No, Mel Gibson, because Mike Connell was in... absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach, the Roman Catholic insane too.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't mean he was insane because he was Roman Catholic. I mean he was of that weird school of being Roman Catholic that is just nuts, like Mel Gibson is.
Yeah.
You know, reject Vatican II, all of that stuff.
I wish you a happy holidays and.
Well, thank you, David. I do appreciate it.
Family gets a. Everything you guys are wishing for, or most of it, or some of it,
or any part thereof, yes,
or any part of it, and you know what, try to. I'd like us to hear a follow up on the fact of this gumbo sausage and shrimp, which I think is just utterly insane. If anyone else can chime in about that,
I have, honest to God, I have never heard that. But
I'm telling you, when you see the letter, you're going to just go, what? And apparently, you know, there's pockets. Hey, this is the thing. There are pockets in our country that are absolutely insane. When
you can't put beans in your beans.
That's right.
Wouldn't be beans.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, Bob.
All right, David. You take care.
This evening.
All right. See
you. I'll send you that stuff on your way.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Later.
All right. Let's keep it rocking and rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Hey, Gary, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Good, great. All right, how are you, man? Happy holidays.
Thank you. Doing good, I reckon. Hanging in.
Good. I think it's very clear that Obama is Luke Skywalker, and we who put him in there is the Force. I think that's what the whole analogy to me is.
Yeah, but, how strong is the Force with this one?
Well, the force is something that's it's for him to continue to master. You know, he got it to where he needed it, but will he continue to use the force to advantage? Or will he be, will he venture over to the dark side? That's what we're gonna have to learn. You know, it's eternal struggle, man. The eternal struggle. So you know that they're right now trying to position themselves. But he doesn't arrest all of them. And
well, I mean, how many more groups can he sort of slap without there being some level of repercussion?
That's part of being a Jedi, man. You know, you got to.
Yeah, well, see, that's the Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's part of the deal. It's never going to be. Clean. I mean, we could sit here all day, this is on the progressive, this show and other progressive sites. Everybody's kind of speculating what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. I've kind of taken the point of I'm going to look at what has been done. And right now, my focus is on George Bush, Dick Cheney, and how they should be gotten, And I think that I feel like there was just as much criticism as I'm hearing about Obama. Is just, looking at what's going on right now, the financial industries and whatever, we'd be a lot ahead of the game as the force. But right now, I think the force is taking a bad U-turn. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be opulent or whatever and watching these things that are going on with Obama, because we're always going to be suspect. But I think we're very clear about what George Bush and some of these people are doing. And I don't know. I just think some of the forces are starting to lose this kind of perspective. That's just my
Well, that's possible. But I mean, Ken Salazar? Gary, I can't be okay with that. You know, especially in light of what, there was a great Smithsonian article that came out about mountaintop removal. I got the link, I guess it was Sunday morning, talking about what's going on here and the stream buffer zone rule. You know, that thing goes effective, what, January the 12th? And it's going to take somebody tough in the Obama administration to roll that garbage back, or else there's not going to be a place in West Virginia or Appalachia in general that is safe from the depredation. You know, if there's a 6-inch seam of coal or a 4-inch seam of coal, then you know we're in the way of their profits.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Salazar is not the guy to roll that back, because he's been a shill for strip mining anyway.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think it's possible that any person can be like the symbol of ISIS and Horus, all seeing and all knowing?
Oh no, I don't know. No, and I don't necessarily buy into that. I don't necessarily buy into that Pauline sort of "I am all things to all people" either. But what I was hoping,
I'm saying that it may take him 4 years to actually understand everything. Any person, no matter what the experience is. You understand what I'm saying? To get in to find out who's...
The fact of the matter is, it may be such that they only start figuring out about year 7.
Well,
I mean, I'm seriously considering the possibility that the presidential term limits amendment should be removed. I don't say that lightly, and I don't say it facetiously.
Yeah, Roosevelt, what he did, 3 terms, right?
4.
You four times. So.
I mean, he would have finished out in 48, and 30, that's 16 years.
Yeah. Might have to do it, man.
Well,
either that or they're going to put Schwarzenegger in there as president.
No. That part of the Constitution, the natural born citizen part, stays.
Well, he sure is promoting it right now. But I would get you one when, you know, we're talking about Eric Holder. And, you know, I would go back to say that people like Eric Holder and all these other people that people are questioning about, I've always said no matter what, you look at the situation, you only can follow the directive of the guy who sent you he sent you to go. And sometimes things don't work out as well. I mean, you look at Susan Rice, you look at Rwanda at the time, she was head of the African section of the foreign policy for Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And she told Clinton everything, and he didn't move on it. So, but a lot of people now still, you know, blame her and jump on her about that.
Right.
The thing with me, from what I understand, and I could be wrong on this is my gut feeling, is that the reason why they got Eric Holder, because he has privately and somewhat publicly said he will go after, you know.
The crooks.
Exactly. And I think, and the reason why I'm almost not getting more convinced of it, the fact that Dick Cheney, who has not been seen or heard from during this financial crisis, during the whole campaign work, all of a sudden now doing these little interviews and running his mouth, to me, it's almost as if he's saying, okay, show me your hand. Show me what you're going to do while I'm still in power. And I'm hoping that, what's his name, Joe Biden can learn to close his mouth for once and not say anything. Because what Dick Cheney would probably want to do is, if they can turn this thing into a big spectacle between him and Dick Cheney, then it gives him a little cover, at least from a public perception, that all of this is personal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just think the Obama campaign should continue to do what they're doing on this and just be very quiet about it. But I do got a feeling that they're going to go after them. And to me, that is
well, certainly the groundwork's been laid with the report that came out in the last week that, you know, torture went all the way to Rumsfeld. We all knew it at the time. But finally, it's been laid out clearly and plainly enough that some of the denser folks who breathe that funny air inside the Beltway realize it too.
Yeah.
So there's some indication along those lines. And by the way, with regard to Eric Holder, this is an interesting endorsement. Former Deputy Attorney General Jim Comey. Now you may remember Jim Comey. He's the one who had an issue with the Bush administration over illegal wiretapping when they were trying to get him to endorse it when Crisco John was laid up with pancreatitis and all of that stuff.
Yeah, not familiar with the story.
Well, Jim Comey has said that Eric Holder, his words, Eric Holder should be confirmed. He said Holder has learned a hard lesson about protecting the integrity of that great institution, being the Justice Department, from political fixers, and that he's demonstrated his commitment to the rule of law across an entire career, and the error should not disqualify him. Eric Holder should be confirmed as Attorney General. And I can understand, you know, I can understand why Obama would want him, because he's as high as a Democrat exists, short of Janet Reno, who has that kind of experience inside the DOJ. But
they all got dirt on their hands. I don't care who they are and watch.
Well, when you get that high up, skeletons are going to almost spontaneously grow in your closet. Because you're going to make mistakes, and there's a lot of people with a lot of power there, and you're going to piss somebody off.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about me is that I'm concerned about something with Eric Holder that nobody else seems even remotely interested in.
Yeah.
And that is
stop America.
That is getting a pass for Chiquita Brand so that nobody in Chiquita did time for literally procuring the murder of hundreds of labor organizers and the field workers in Chiquita's banana operations in Colombia.
How much did he know about that?
It's not what he knew, it's what he did. In the course,
if he didn't know, I mean, it wouldn't matter what he did. I mean, if he didn't know what he was doing, you know what I mean?
No. He was corporate counsel on a criminal case. All right.
Okay.
He went straight from the Department of Justice to this silk stocking corporate, I mean, big time firm in D.C. and became corporate counsel to Chiquita Brands. Then, when a member of the board of directors of Chiquita Brands went to then Deputy Assistant Attorney General, what's his name? Skeletor. Come on. Chertoff, I think it was. Went to Chertoff and said, you know, I just found out that we've been paying off death squads in Colombia. And Chertoff said, I don't want to hear nothing more about this. I'll get back to you. And never did. And then eventually Chiquita Brands was busted for on charges of literally federal charges of doing business with someone who was on the official U.S. government terrorist list. I think the charge was providing material support to a known terrorist organization. Well, Gary, if you or I did that, we'd be in some prison right now. But what happened was, by that time, Eric Holder was corporate counsel for Chiquita Brands, and he went back to the Justice Department, where he still had a lot of buddies, and they crafted a sweetheart deal for Chiquita Brands before there was ever even any kind of, no trial, no evidentiary hearing, no findings of fact. And the whole purpose of this was to keep any of the members of any of Chiquita's suits from doing, from spending any time making little rocks out of big rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the fine that was paid by Chiquita, although, it was measured by millions, it was literally, as it goes as far as their earnings are concerned, it was literally a drop in the bucket, and it doesn't even qualify as a slap on the wrist. Meanwhile, this stuff is still going on in Colombia. Obama specifically mentioned the repression of labor in Colombia. And here he's got a nominee for attorney general who was actively involved in whitewashing what was done there.
Demarcus Road, possibly. Maybe he had one of those experiences.
I don't know.
Always a corporate lawyer, always a corporate lawyer.
Well, but the thing is, he didn't start. Yeah, he's a Justice Department long timer, and so I'm figuring that the reason he got chosen is that he knows how that extremely Byzantine operation works, and I'm sure it's kind of nice for Obama, because none of the Democrats will raise the Chiquita Brands issue because, after all, he's a Democratic nominee. So that gets him a pass there. And none of the Republicans are going to raise the Chiquita Brands issue because Chiquita Brands is corporate America and no Republicans, I don't care how much political partisanship they want, no Republican is going to cross corporate America on that account.
It seems like Obama made a good pick then.
So it's a win-win, and the only thing they're having a fit about is Mark Rich, because, of course, that brings on Clinton derangement syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say all to this is that, again, you know, it gets back to, you know, what are we really going to focus on now? You know, look, I know what I'm going to say right now is going to probably piss off some people who listen to the show, particularly some of the gays who listen to the show. But here's the fact that I say this to African American people a lot of times. We get into issues with people who are really screwing over our entire community at the sake of something that I can, again, this is me speaking, consider a small little conciliation or whatever you want to call it, that probably in the long throes of things doesn't really mean that much. And I see this time and time again with Al Sharpton, with how you sometimes, and you know, they use our community to do this. Is that, you know, these guys, these banks and other people can screw over our communities for years on end. There's no analysis, no outrage or anything. But if one of those corporate executives says the N-word and he isn't fired immediately, you know, there's an outrage that you've never seen before.
Well, and you know what? There's a lot of truth in that, because the little workshop that I attended last week, you know, we talked about the different degrees of racism, whether it is personal, institutional or cultural. And when Jimmy the Greek says something stupid, that's personal. That's personal racism, and it's dealt with quickly and harshly. Meanwhile, if you think of the iceberg analogy, all the stuff that's under the water that's hulling the ship, the institutional and cultural racism, well, that just as long as nobody's out there saying that word, you know, on behalf of, then, you know, we'll look the other way. But, whoa, I tell you, I can't, for my part, Gary, I can't tolerate the open individual stuff. I'm just not that kind of guy.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, where's the outrage? I'm not saying there shouldn't be outrage. Where is the outrage for the banks who came out today who said they're not telling us what they're doing with their money? I don't hear too much of outrage, but last week, for the almost 3 or 4 days, I heard consistent outrage at the Obama campaign for putting Rick Warren on this immigration thing or whatever. You know, it's like I want to see outrage for the banking thing, which I've been pissed off, you know, as you know, for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it.
Well, you know, and there's another angle to the banking story. Do you remember when we all had so much fun when the big three auto guys got pinched for flying down in their corporate jets?
Yeah.
Well, there's one, Gary, of the banking houses that has a fleet of 7, and nobody has said diddly to them.
It's probably safe.
And they're still flying around in them, and they're even used for personal travel for their, for their silk suit types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got billions, man. What AIG has done is, you know, it's just amazing how they have not changed any bonus structures or whatever. I was reading the guy from what bank is he at? Merrill Lynch, the guy they hired last year. This guy made they pay him $57,000 in salary. You know how they do. $57,000 salary, but he made $83 million last year in stock options. $83 million. This is after Merrill Lynch had a major collapse last year. $83 million. You know, it is amazing what they're doing. Because what's happening is the rich are just hoarding money. I don't want to hear all this crap about what's going on. Everybody knows what's going on. You study South America, you go to any other small country, what happens is we're seeing it. They're sucking all of the money out of the middle class and giving it to the rich, because, see, for them, it doesn't matter. They don't have to get over a long time if they can get it right now. So they're not concerned if the whole planet crashed, because they're going to have all the money. So if they have all the money, we'll be just paupers, and they can just, you know, throw us a little crumbs, and we'll just be happy to get it. Only until we go, like, 1876, or we go, you know, French Revolution on them, is anything going to change? I mean, that's just how it's going to be. And the fact that nobody is giving the banks any kind of, like, come to the table, sit down, let's analyze what you're doing like they're doing toward the auto industry, to me is a clear indication which way we're headed. They are getting the biggest pass of all time. We can sit here and argue about, you know, Prop 8 and all this other stuff, and I'm not saying that it's, we shouldn't analyze it. We can talk about this first black president stuff. But if we ain't looking at what's really going to put us in the hole, and it's a financial thing, you know, look, I would love to give the head on to the radio station. I can't give it because the little account that I do give from my charity, I have a couple of clients who are in default who have not paid me because of the bad economy.
Yeah.
So therefore, head on is suffering probably. I know I don't give a lot, but I'm pretty sure.
No. We miss every dime and every dollar, and frankly, things have fallen off a bit, and I recognize that it's a function of the economy. This country's got to get well if we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
We've got to take it to the banks at this point.
By the way, the outfit with the fleet of seven jets that are used for personal trips.
Yeah.
AIG.
That's what it is. Well.
Yeah. Now go put your foot through a door. I mean, that just makes me crazy, Gary. It makes me nuts.
I actually stopped reading stories on them because I get into a full mental rage. I read about them because I had to deal with just some banks recently with just some stuff that I had, you know, recently happened. And it's just like, you know, it was just like the most painful, like, you know, you have to be careful because you can't curse them out on the phone because, you know, you just certain places, you just can't do that.
But, Lord, you sure do want to.
Yeah, you don't want to ever get them on tape. But the point being is that the stuff that they do, you know, I just kind of say to myself, you know, if people are working there, I almost want to say, you know what? I hope the whole freaking system collapses because I know so many people in that industry would be hurt. So I don't go that far. But it's just amazing how crooked that entire system is, all the way down to even some of the lower. I mean, they train them to lie. Just train them to point blank lie to you, you know? And I've even had them kind of admit, yeah, we know we're doing this. And they laugh about it, jokingly. You know, I'm kind of friendly. It's amazing how you can get stuff out of people when you're friendly with them over the phone. And, you know, I wish I could take this. But it's so corrupt to the core that people don't really realize what's happened. I mean, they passed all those loans themselves on fraud. They keep saying, well, you know, it was the homeowners, whatever. They had the stats. They have the numbers of what people make. They can look in your bank account. They got everything they need to know. But they know that they can see a 401k, they know everything that you got. And they say, you know what, this guy can spend it. They don't even think about the fact that you may have to use that money for your kid. You know what I'm saying? That's how they look at numbers now. And that's the worst thing is they can see all your money now. And they want it all. They want it all, man.
Every last nickel. They really, really do. That's what the bank bailout was about.
Yeah.
They suspected that we had some money squirreled away that they hadn't gotten at yet, and the Bush administration said, well, let us help you find it.
Yeah, and they're buying every bank. I mean, you see Chase doing this. So once they get everything, they have everybody on lockdown. They see all your money in one suit. You think they ain't sharing that information? Yes, they are. They're looking at Bob's 401k and everything. Oh, Bob got this. You know, if he gets really, really tight, he's going to dip into it, you know? And, hey, that's great for the United States because then we can tax the 401k money. And that's what, you know, it is the deepest. It's simple in its conception, but it's deep, too, of how they're just basically robbing us point blank range. And I just can't believe the American people are sitting around talking about issues that do matter, but not at the level that they need to be talking about this whole banking thing. Because the banking thing is the key to everything. I mean, it's the housing, it's the credit that they loan out for the auto industry. If they were loaning the money to people to buy the car, they could buy the car, they could save the industry. The banks are the key to everything right now, and everybody's talking about everything else.
To what extent do you think that the banking business is a little shot across Obama's bow? Don't cross us, because...
Let me get down on my rant for a minute. Let me think straight for a second. When you say a shot calls back, explain a little bit more because my mind is like.
Well, I mean, just a little warning. You know, we can take you down too. We can make sure you don't ever get well. Because, I'm sorry, call me a big conspiracy theorist, big old paranoid, whatever. You know, paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. There's nothing irrational in watching the American banking industry and thinking they're out to get us. Because, like you said, they're squeezing us for everything we got. And I can't help but wonder if the Bush administration, this is all a deliberate attempt to make sure that Barack Obama doesn't have a prayer. I mean, my God, Gary, the Fed came out, what, was it Wednesday? Tuesday? The Fed came out and the prime lending rate is now what, 0.25%? They got nowhere else to go.
Well, their goal is to destroy the dollar, so that they can, if they can bring us into a third world status, it gives them a lot of power, and centralized power. Basically, that's any third world country. I mean, almost third world countries are beholden to the banks. That's what keeps them in so much debt, So America, because, the one thing we do have a certain amount of assets and ingenuity, and American people themselves do have some assets more so than other people, that we are very hard to enslave. So what they done figured out is that they have to enslave us to some degree. Now, they got a lot of us, some of us on debt, but then there are a lot of people who are on credit card debt or housing are saying, you know what, I ain't got to pay it back, and they're walking away from it. So then they go, oh, snap. Wait a minute.
We got some much needed, very, very modest credit card reforms last week.
Yeah, they don't take place the next year.
Yeah.
Not next year, 2010.
Oh, ain't it beautiful? Ain't it just beautiful?
It happens in 2010. You know why?
Because there's a reason that carrot hangs beyond the nose of the horse. Because as long as the horse can't get a bite of that carrot, he keeps running. People talk about the carrot and the stick, as if the stick is the worst part and the carrot. No, in a way, that carrot that the horse can never reach is far more cruel than whacking him on the ass with the stick.
That's right. That's why Obama's the most protected man in the country right now in the world. You don't have to worry about anything happening to him because let's just say something happened to him. They realize that the American people on edge. They still may be dumb, they may be stupid, they may watch Dancing Stars, they may be drunk on video games. But I think they also know that a lot of people are right on that edge. They hear it in the phone calls and people calling the banks, hollering about their mortgages. You know what I'm saying? Those phones are tapped. They're listening to that stuff. And trust me, people aren't nice as me when I call a bank. People are cursing people out, and stuff like that. They understand. That's why they brought that unit back. You heard about that military unit back here for domestic pacification. They understand what's going on.
They're worried about some stuff hitting the fan.
That's right, man. And if the force gets busy, they can't be saved. So what they have to do is play nice. These for, a little while, things get somewhat back on course. That's my opinion. And then they'll continue to slow burn. I don't think they were expecting this thing to fall this fast, my gut feeling.
Well, you do know that there's a new talking point out, right, Gary? Flush Flimball debuted it.
I don't listen to the sickness anymore, but anyway.
I know, and neither do I. But that's why. Limbaugh asked, "Who's benefiting aside from the people being bailed out? The Democrat Party and Barack Obama are benefiting. They got elected. They increased their numbers in the House." They increased their numbers in the Senate. They got the White House now, and they've got a crisis that people think can only be fixed with the almighty and powerful government interceding to save this or to save that, when in fact the government is going to nationalize the automobile industry. It's going to nationalize some banks. It's going to nationalize the mortgage industry and may end up nationalizing the automobile industry.
Never will never happen.
And the right wing is, but they're on this. I mean, they are on this like a duck on a June bug. That the whole financial crisis was manufactured by the Democratic Party. Now they lost their tiny little pea-sized brains minds over the notion that maybe George Bush was something less than diligent on and leading up to September the 11th, 2001. But this they can pull out of a hat and say as if it was as if it was credible. McCain has said it, that Palin said it, we didn't lose the election, the economy, bull. The election was a boat race. Obama was supposed to win. I'm convinced of that as sure as I am that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. The Republican Party did not want the White House this time through, because they're just about done pillaging everything that we've got, and they want 4 or 8 years to fix things so that they can come in and look. The Vikings did the same thing in the ancient history of Great Britain. Leave them alone for a couple of years. Let them build their little huts back up, build up some more wealth, and then we'll go raid them again. You don't raid people that you raided the day before.
I think they got one. They might have made a miscalculation, because the one thing I think they're going to miscalculate is that as the thing gets worse and it gets bad, I kind of got this strong feeling, I could be wrong on this, that American people are not going to blame Obama for this, because I think there's something that has happened over the 8-3 years that has fundamentally sunken in to the American people. Now, I'm not saying all of the fundies or the people here, because Obama technically didn't win by a lot of votes. There was still a lot of people voted for McCain. But I also have gotten a feeling that a lot of people have come to a certain understanding about, ironically, or an education about how things are starting to work in America. I think it's coming clear in how they're treating the banking industry, how they're mistreating the auto workers. And I think what's going to happen is that as America sinks probably within the next 2 years to the lowest of the low, by the time that fourth year come around, I think we will have a little bit of reprieve, mainly because I think we're going to have some more, this time probably some more competent people in the White House. But I also think Americans are going to change some of their behavior patterns. And I think if things start to look better 4 years from now, I think, even though, you know, the race thing could still be there and all the other stuff that they're going to do, I think if we're just starting to head in the right direction, Americans will make the right choice again.
You know, in more than one way.
I'm hoping, that's my gut feeling, just like I had a gut feeling that Obama would win, because I just think that's where America is just headed. Now, I don't really think there's nothing really we can do to change a lot. I mean, sometimes things just take their course, you know what I mean?
And yeah, the force does what the force can.
Exactly, and I think justice, you know, regardless of what people think, who was it that said, I don't know if Martin Luther King, I know Johnny Cochran has said it one time, that says ultimately the arc of the universe bends toward truth. And I do believe that, I've always believed that, and I think I think Dick Cheney and his crew, at least some of them are going to get their due justice. I do believe that. And I think the fact that Barack Obama got in there is any indication, whatever we think about him, out of a lot of the people that are out there, he's a lot better than some of the other people that we got out there, which may not be saying much, but my God, I mean, could you imagine if another fundy got in there again, you know, like a Huckabee or somebody? I mean, we could have been there, man.
But that's the thing that worries me about Rick Warren, Gary. Another fundy is in there. I mean,
no, I don't think Rick is really a fundy. I think he's a phony fundy. I think I found out, you know, I don't know if you heard of it, that he's gone to his website and stuff, and they've taken down all that gay
stuff. Oh yeah, they took down all the anti-gay stuff. They purged it in the last 24 hours.
I think he just wants to be in the limelight, and I think he'll do whatever he has to do.
He wants the power. He wants to be, you know, Falwell's out of the way. Billy Graham's on his way out. And Rick Warren wants to be Billy Graham.
Yeah. And if the country's moving toward gay tolerance, he's going to have to move too. You know, me personally, as a Christian, I have my own personal opinion about that. And my thing is, that's between that person and their God. Your sexuality between you and your God, I don't have no say in that. To me, that's just basic. You know,
yeah.
God loves all. That's all it is. God, Jesus said that God loves all. But, you know, whether, you know, what's immoral or whatever, to me, sexuality is between you and your God. I have no say in that. It's not even my right to even say anything. And any Christian that runs around.
Well, yeah, here are the words from Saddleback Church. Because membership in a church is an outgrowth of accepting the lordship and leadership of Jesus in one's life, someone unwilling to repent of their homosexual lifestyle would not be accepted as a member at Saddleback. See, there's all kinds of little landmines in that because, one, it holds that being gay is a lifestyle, what's the word, choice, which it isn't. And that by being gay, someone is therefore rejecting the lordship and leadership of Jesus. Okay? I know by personal experience, from just hearing the level of devotion, our dear friend Peter has, he often says, I love Jesus, but I'm no Christian, because he doesn't want to be even remotely associated with people like the Saddleback crowd or the hate-filled monsters in the Methodist Church who are building George Bush a monument to murder. I understand. But in terms of devotion to the teachings and the saving grace, I'll put a whole no. And that there's just sickening bigotry. And the fact that they pulled it down, well, that doesn't say anything about, you know, what you mentioned earlier, a road to Damascus moment for Rick Warren. That's PR. That is crisis management, image management.
But they truly believe that that's the position and that's what they believe, word of God. If I had believed, you know, that's what I believe, that's the word of God, I ain't changing it. I don't care what the media, anybody.
Yeah, but you don't have a few million dollars hanging on it. You got to remember that hate-filled campaign that was run by the Mormon Church and by the Focus on the Family crowd. Focus on the Family is down several million dollars a month in donations and laid off a quarter of its workforce. You know, so much for the saving grace of Jesus in Colorado Springs. You're out of a job, sister.
Well, if the Saddleback members and people are reading it, they're reading about that in the last days. You know, there's an analogy that tells you in Revelation that these large churches would come up and they would not be of God. And I can go on the whole thing about how they're probably not even the Bible talks about all this. So
that's why it uses the word antichrists in the plural.
Right, the antichrist. And that's what they are. And even Jesus said many will come and say, I did great things in the last days. I mean, he'll say, get away from me, for I never knew you, you evildoer. And that's what you're seeing, I mean, with the big, you know, the churches and all this other stuff. They've been corrupt for years.
Yeah, broad is the road that leads to damnation.
Catholic Church, I can go through them. Does not mean that the faith in itself, or, you know, whether you're atheist or whatever, does not mean that there's a God, there's not a God. The point being that all this stuff is being foretold in their own book, and it says, when they, you know, these Christians, they go off, well, you know, you can't be born a homosexual. Yes, you can, because the Bible says we're all born to sin. So by your logic, if it is a sinful lifestyle and we're all born into sin, then they could have been born gay. You know what I'm saying? Their own logic does not even make sense. So, you know, if they follow their own logic, they would say, okay, well, yeah, you're right, you know, blah, blah, blah. But see, they say, oh, no, it's a choice. But it's a sin, right? So if we were born to sin, we didn't have no choice. We were born into it, you know. It's just not, their logic's not even right, because they're not Christians. They were Christians. They would know that what trumps all is love. It trumps everything. Jesus said himself, the greatest commandment is, you know, to love your God and love your neighbor. Everything else falls under that. Everything. You know?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Gary, I hope you and yours are going to have a wonderful holiday, a wonderful Christmas, and it's been a while hearing from you. Don't be such a stranger, all right?
You know, I hope things pick up, and, you know, I can start helping the horn again.
We do appreciate it, and I hope not just for the horn's sake, but for yours as well, because everybody got to make a living. I don't think we got any trust fund babies in the audience.
No. And the ones that are, they're starting to come around.
Well, Gary, may the force be with you.
Yeah, it is.
All right, bye now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Bob?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm on?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, good. I'm Jeff from Arkansas.
Jeff, good to hear from you.
First time calling. I've been listening to the horn ever since I kind of stumbled upon it a year ago. And it's great. I listen to it in podcasts when I'm at work, and I love it. It's especially your program, Rob. The reason I called was this whole Rick Warren thing and the Obama controversy, you know, it ruffled a lot of feathers. And it offends me. It really offends me that Barack Obama would invite this fundamentalist freak to give the invocation at his inauguration.
And, you know, you are by no means alone in that regard, Jeff. I don't want to be accused of overreacting, but from a philosophical standpoint, understanding that, you know, Rick Warren's not going to make policy and Rick Warren's not going to be the secretary of anything, but this is horrifying.
It would offend me just as much, but, you know, Barack Obama threw Reverend Wright under the bus, and he totally distanced himself from him, and he repudiated his words with the strongest, you know, possible rhetoric. And then he goes out and he invites this guy to give the invocation?
Well, but back up a minute. It's actually worse than that. And this is the first time I've had occasion to, you know, sort of wonder where his head is. He went out. You remember when, you know, Rick Warren out at his, you know, little mega church, huge mega church. What do I mean, little? The huge mega church. He went out for a so-called values discussion that was carried by CNN, that was hosted by Rick Warren and Saddleback. And that thing was the biggest dog and pony show that I have seen in recent memory. I mean,
that's the one with McCain?
Yeah. Remember how we found out? Remember how we found out that? Well, it looked a little funny because McCain was leaping to give the answers, the answers, and Rick Warren had assured everybody that
cone of silence.
Yeah, cone of silence. There you go. Well, then we found out that McCain wasn't even in the building.
Yeah, he lied right to his face. And because, you know, Warren invited him to his church a couple of years ago. Well, you know, if you want to sit down and have a forum at the White House and discuss AIDS and discuss these issues, that's fine. Don't honor the man. And don't tell and the people who said it's not an honor for this guy to give the invocation. Are you kidding me? Of course it's an honor. I don't know. It's despicable.
It's not a dishonor. I mean, there's not a preacher in this country that wouldn't just flip out.
Absolutely.
Except for... You know, maybe a couple of really diehard spiritual ones who read that verse in, what is it, Matthew, about if you've got something to say to God, go in a closet and say it and then come back out and go on about your business.
You know.
And the Pharisees pray loudly in the street and yea, verily, they have their reward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't forget that for some reason or another. And that's what this is. This is any public praying like this. Whether it's in front of a football game or before a parade or before an inauguration or before a session of Congress, it is every last bit of it rank unto the nostrils of the Almighty hypocrisy.
Yes.
I mean, how can it not be, Jeff?
And, you know, just speaking from my perspective, I know there's been a lot, you know, said about, you know, black homophobia. I'm a black guy. I'm straight. I'm in my 20s. I'm a college student. And, you know, I do think this kind of parallels the civil rights movement. As much as we black people don't want to admit it, I think that denying someone, Rick Warren actually, he encouraged people to go out and vote against human rights, against the constitutional rights of a group of people. That's disgusting. How Obama can just sit there and defend this, how anybody could defend this is about inclusion and coming together. I'm all for inclusion. I'm all for coming together. But when you do that, you have to make sure that your views are known. You have to make sure that the person you're talking to knows that his views are not in line with your views. That won't happen when
But that's the inquiry. Who are you coming together with?
Yeah, exactly.
I was sitting in a classroom once, and I heard a student say to a professor, "Well, I was just playing devil's advocate." And the professor said right back at him, real quick, "You be careful about playing devil's advocate because the longer you play, the more you're going to resemble it."
Exactly.
And the fact of the matter is, if you sit down to dinner with the devil, it doesn't matter how good the food is or how good you are, the devil is still at the other end of the table. And frankly, you know, while I don't go in for most of this mythology, if you want to work in those in the terms of that image, Rick Warren is a devil.
Yeah.
Because devils preach hate. Devils preach division. Devils preach, well, the opposite of anything that, that Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter ever preached.
Yeah, they preach things like, you know, gay marriage is equivalent to bestiality and pedophilia. I just had to call in about that because I can't wrap my mind around why Obama would do this. What is he gaining by doing this? Exactly. What's the net gain? I don't get it.
What is the political calculus? Sure. And because this is all, I don't care who says what. I mean, I was born at night, not last night. And there is not a thing done that does not have an element of political calculus to it. That's why it's politics. And that's why the best politicians are the ones who are the most calculating. Somebody along the way said, you know, that this would be good for Obama. Maybe Obama said it himself. And I get everything that Bart Kopp was arguing. You know, it's his inauguration. He can do it any way he wants to. But that doesn't mean that I have to go along with it. Because, again, there are a lot of us out here, you, me, everyone who listens to this program and listens to this network, in many ways, all we've got is our integrity.
Yep.
And if we sacrifice this if we sacrifice it now, we won't have anything left when the rubber really hits the road.
And, you know, to come out and for him to just say he disagrees with him and think that's going to be enough to placate, you know, enough to just to tone
well,
down the rhetoric.
Well, there's but Jeff, there's something going on with this with Rick Warren because all of a sudden, I mean, he's acquiring rock star status.
I thought you were going to go about it. He's talking about Melissa Etheridge.
Well, there's that, but there's also this thing where he was, gracious sakes, apparently he also addressed the Muslim Public Affairs Council convention this past weekend, and Warren showed up and said, "I love Muslims, and for the media's purpose, I happen to love gays and straights." Huh?
I don't want him to get married. Huh?
So just to recap, he's going to do this invocation, and he's going to give the address at the Martin Luther King annual commemoration at Ebenezer Baptist Church. How did this guy suddenly ascend to such a vaunted position in places where he has no business?
Yeah. Where are all the people on our side? There should be more of an outrage about this. Why are we acting like this is a good thing? You know, some people, not you and of course, but you know, there are other talk show, so-called liberal talk show host. Tom Hartman was one. He was talking about how this was a great, brilliant move by Obama, and I'm like, are you kidding? Rick Warren will never, ever, ever change. It's not going to happen. You're not going to win Rick Warren over. You're not going to win his followers over by letting him speak at the invocation. It doesn't work like that.
I mean, let's put it this way. Would Martin Luther King's efforts have been made easier by bringing George Wallace and Lester Maddox to the Ebenezer Baptist Church?
Yeah.
Or by letting them speak at JFK's inauguration? This is the same thing. It really, really is.
Exactly. you have to stand up to bigotry. Even if a lot of people happen to agree with Warren, you know, you stand up to it. You tell them no. You don't invite them is what you do. You just don't invite them in the first place. This is a problem with Obama's own making. He could have, how many liberal pastors out there who, maybe don't necessarily agree with gay marriage, but who aren't so vocal in their hatred, who don't compare it to incest and pedophilia. He couldn't have found one of them. Yeah, I don't know.
And, you know, it's coming out. Warren also served as part of a prayer circle of supportive clergy leaders during Obama's presidential campaign.
Oh, yeah?
What?
Yeah.
So am I to understand that Rick Warren was a closet Obama supporter?
What is this? Did he actually pray with Obama? What do you mean?
It was a prayer circle and supportive clergy leaders. I guess they just got together on a conference call and they prayed their little heads off.
Okay.
But this now here's one that's going to blow your mind. He addresses this Muslim group, Rick Warren does, about 800 members of the Muslim Public Affairs Council at its convention in Long Beach, California. The L.A. Times story says that Warren's theme was about people getting along, forgetting their differences, and focusing on areas of agreement. And the audience cheered him, and many people rose to their feet, and among the first to stand was Melissa Etheridge. I'm beginning to feel a little Alice in Wonderland-y here, you know, just right down the rabbit hole. Nothing's making sense right now.
Is he so charismatic as he could just have the views that he has and win over people who are the exact opposite? I got to meet this guy. I don't know. And I don't want to meet him.
Well, you know, turn on any of the religious cable channels, and sooner or later you'll see him.
Yeah.
And it's creepy.
Bowling.
Well, see, but he's telling people to forget their differences, but at the same time, he's remembering them. Because as long as this guy says that there is a class of people in this country who are not entitled to the full rights conferred by the Constitution of these United States, then he is one of the dividers. He's not following his own teaching. You know, the New Testament, Yeshua would say, physician, heal thyself. And don't be plucking the mote out of my eye before you go and haul the beam out of your own.
Exactly. And, you know, this isn't just a disagreement. You know, you don't get to disagree about human rights, in my opinion. I don't. When it comes to taking away the rights of people, it's just despicable. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, this article also goes on to say that after meeting in Washington in January 2006, Obama and Warren began speaking regularly by phone. Huh? Hey, Rick. It's Barack. Barack, what are you doing, man? Oh, just praying. Me too. What?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, I could be entirely wrong. I acknowledge that I could be entirely wrong, but I come from the same fundamentalist tradition that Rick Warren comes from, and I know how slippery they are, and I know how you wouldn't turn your back on them with a dead skunk. I know this. I've got the stripes from it.
You would think more of us would know it, though. I mean,
Ebenezer Baptist Church, don't they have any deacons?
Exactly.
But, you know, this is a little bit scary because one of the spokespeople for the Muslim Public Affairs Council said, we're always looking to work with unlikely partners, and I think he's a new kind of evangelical. We have a lot in common. And then the article notes, Warren, like many Muslims, opposes abortion and same-sex marriage. Well, now... And see, that goes back to something you've probably heard along the way. The fact that I have argued all along, if these fundamentalist so-called Christians and the fundamentalist so-called Muslims ever figure out how much they've got in common, the rest of us normal people are done.
Exactly.
because they hold a lot of views in common. Basically, it comes down to a question of whether or not Jesus was the Son of God or a prophet of God. And frankly, that's some religious hair splitting that can be resolved on a Tuesday afternoon over tea.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, you hate gay marriage? Me too.
God, yep, hate it. Abortion? Oh, hate it. Allah hates it. So's my God. Oh, well, we're done. Gambling? No gambling. No gambling here. Booze? No booze. No booze. Okay, but look, what are we fighting about? Let's go kill the infidels.
You want to keep women as second-class citizens? Sure. Yeah, but...
See how it works? Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Scary, isn't it?
I really, really do hope that Obama's going to come around on this and somebody's going to get to him. I hope he's not in a bubble like Bush where, you know, nothing... He's not hearing what we say. He's not.
Oh, I want Jeff. I want him to make a fool out of me. Granted, I can usually do it okay by myself, but I want to be so wrong about this. I want him to get all Obama Wan Kenobi and do the Jedi mind trick. And the next thing you know, the nation's looking at Rick Warren going, "You're a freak."
Yeah.
I want that to happen, and then I'm going to look up and go, "Man, that man is so much smarter than me." And then I'll sit down and shut up. But until that happens, no, not as long as we got problems with lawyers covering up torture and murder in Colombia, and we got former Colorado senators who have never met a strip mine they didn't like, and you know, on and on and on. I'm gonna have to wait and be, you know, I'll do the Doubting Thomas thing and wait and be proven a fool. Because I'm not feeling real stupid right now.
Exactly.
Well, Jeff, it's awful good to hear from you. I hope this was your first call. I certainly hope it will not be your last.
Thanks, Bob. I really enjoy your networking. Certainly, I love your show. Thanks for letting me call.
Oh, it's been great. And again, I look forward to hearing from you. I hope you have a happy holiday there in Arkansas.
You too.
All right, bye now. It's wonderful to hear from new folks. You never, and see, that's the thing. When you call into this program, you never know who you're going to empower to find their own voice. And I don't know about you, but I think that's a beautiful thing.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
You know that apple pie thing?
Yeah, the mock apple pie, right.
That definitely works. My mother, and of course I know what Ritz crackers are. I love them. But anyway.
How could you not love them? They're loaded with fat. Fat tastes good.
Of course. And they're filling.
Yes, they are.
But my mother got, you know, she got a recipe for it, and she just thought she would try it, and it was amazing. It was really amazing. That may be my telephone.
Oh, there's a little beep. Okay.
Yeah, but I want. Well, I'll just skip. But I have to say to Rick Goodner, you're wrong about cornbread.
Yeah, no sugar in
especially
cornbread.
In this neck of the woods.
Oh yeah, you know. Right. No sugar in the, if cornbread's supposed to have sugar in it, they'd call it cake.
One time I was going to make some of that, you know, that Jiffy mix.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've met it.
For my dad, and he said, no, that's not cornbread, that's cake. But anyway, I won't be long because I'm beeping, but I just wanted to say that, what's his face, Cheney?
Yeah, Dick.
If he's inviting those people over to his place, he's just probably trying to admire his handiwork.
Oh, Juanita.
I know I'm bad.
No, you're ascribing a level of evil to that man that I've reached for but never found, and you just...
Oh, I have.
Yeah. Admiring his handiwork. Amen, amen.
Uh-huh. Just think about it. And her writing, you were talking about her writing pornography. I don't think she knew. She may still not know that that's all over the internet. That book she wrote.
I will never forget many years ago when I read selected passages of sisters and had the entire audience just gagging into buckets all over the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, there's stuff I'd never heard of.
Whew.
But she was on one show. They asked her about.
Oh. Oh God. Juanita's battery died. Maybe we'll be able to finish the conversation off tomorrow evening. A little bit of email rolling in just to wrap things up a bit. Kate reminds us, the Warren mess is all theater, off Broadway. We don't even have good seats, had to stand out in the rain for tickets, and now the house smells like wet wool on all the sheep when wolves are working the refreshments in the lobby. Mother will not be fooled. David in Tennessee says, Warren, Obama, Melissa, and a few Muslims. It's wrestling, Bob. It is wrestling. I get that. I understand that. But there's something, you know, wrestling is for a purpose. In the case of the wrestling to which David refers, you know, you bring the rubes out on Saturday night to the local National Guard armory, and you lift, you know, you separate them for $5 or $10 or $15 or $20, whatever it was in the day, maybe a dime once upon a time when a dime meant something. And there was a purpose behind it, and it was a strictly commercial purpose. Is that what this is? Pure commercialism? I don't know. I'm a firm believer in the law of unintended consequences. And there's stuff that I just feel it in my bones. There's stuff coming out of this, that comes out of this war and mess, that while it may be theater and maybe wrestling, interesting that both Kate and David tapped into the same little corner of the zeitgeist, one with which I do not disagree. It may be all that, but it may turn out to be something more. And Reverbo adds this bit. Subject line, I can't remember all the categories tonight, but there's a place for these. Quote, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, i.e. the business cycle, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson. And then, of course, Reverbo says, there's this. In the wake of daughter Palin's potential mother-in-law's recent drug charges, I've heard their ilk referred to as sleigh trash. And, you know, we barely touched on that one, too. In part because it's just so complicated working out, you know, describing who this woman is. She's Levi Johnson's mama, and Levi Johnson's mama is the future mother-in-law of Bristol Palin, who is the daughter of Sarah Palin, who was supposed to have given birth a couple of days ago, but I haven't seen that yet. And it turns out that while many people suspected she was cooking some meth, that in fact the leakage is that Levi Johnson's mama is a pill head. A possession with intent to distribute sort of pill head. You know, an a follower of Limbaugh, if you will, an oxymoron. And, of course, there were allegations that Bristol herself had chewed a few up for the refreshing burst of flavor along the way, and that Levi had as well. You know, what the hell else are you going to do? I mean, I think it gets dark early here. Oof! But, of course, the Alaska governor's office is trying to do the no comment cha-cha-cha, as well you would expect them to. Let's see now. Just to let you know, these things do have ramifications. The Rick Warren thing, it may be all theater. But let's close with this. You remember that Richard Cizik, who was vice president of the American National Association of Evangelicals, Richard Cizik was purged in the last week or so because he had the audacity to suggest that folks who happen to be gay, you know, that God kind of made them that way, you know, to the extent that God made anything, because, you know, God, you know. He was purged for saying that, that gay folks might actually deserve all the same rights that everybody, all the, you know, all the heteros and so get. But he had raised, the stink he had raised earlier had to do with the environment and humanity's ability to continue its existence upon the planet. And since the purge, well, it's not so much how they how the National Association of Evangelicals responded to the gay issue or gay marriage issue, the or what I like to call a constitutional rights for everybody issue. No, they went back and fixed what Reverend Cizik did with regard to the environment. And that is, the National Association of Evangelicals stated very clearly that they're going back to the global warming denier end of the spectrum. In other words, what they like to call being neutral. You know, sometimes being neutral is a position. Neutral aligns with denier in this particular instance. An individual by the name of Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. Why does a mother or a father name their child E? Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. Maybe his name is Evelyn. And he went to E. Calvin after having, you know, been beaten up all his life on the playground or something. E. Calvin Beisner is the national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He says, the National Association of Evangelicals has never taken a position on global warming, or more broadly described as climate change, and I'm not aware of any movement within the NAE to bring about such a statement. He went on to say, Beisner did, Mr. Cizik, for example, said that those who disagreed with his position on global warming were in danger of the judgment of God. I think that's going way beyond what is warranted either in the text of Scripture or by any of the scientific evidence. You know, we talked a long time ago about having rubber bricks. ELO runs the Horn store. I wonder if it would be possible to get the folks at Cafe Press to design us a Horn rubber brick that folks could access by. And, you know, you can go to the Horn store, get T-shirt, cap, you know, all reasonably priced, very cool stuff. Just click on a link at headonradionetwork.com, and there you go. Because that's a rubber brick throwing moment, my friends. Friends and neighbors. I think that's going way beyond what is warranted either in the text of Scripture or by any of the scientific evidence. You know, that people who deny global warming are in danger of the judgment of God. A, because there's no scientific evidence for the existence of God, but, you know, that seems to be a sort of goes without saying kind of thing if you have any regard for science whatsoever. And on the other hand, I think that's going way beyond what is warranted either in the text of Scripture or by any scientific evidence. The text of Scripture. Now, as we have all learned through various and sundry prayer meeting, the text of Scripture is rather a fluid thing. Because the same Scripture that the wing nuts and the planet killers use, you know, that God tells man to go and take dominion over the earth, that you know, they say that means you can blow up any mountain, pollute any stream, kill, 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 poison, 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 kill, poison, kill, poison, 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 kill, kill. And God's fine with that. Roughly speaking, it's the theological equivalent of suggesting that because the museum now has possession of, let's see, arguing that because some fundamentalist has possession or runs the museum where Michelangelo's David is housed, that they are free to go and give David a circumcision. Right? No, not really. Because you can argue that taking dominion over the earth means taking stewardship. See, that's one of those words the fundies like. Taking stewardship of the earth and making sure that the earth continues to be habitable for humankind. And you can even argue that the peoples who wrote that book had a pretty good idea of what that meant insofar as they lived in a fragile ecosystem, and if they in their nest, the whole culture dropped dead. I mean, one of their earliest stories is about how they overgrazed and overplanted and over everything the land of Canaan. And the next thing you know, they're down in Egypt going, can I have a piece? Can I have like a little bit of falafel and some pita bread, please? And you know what flows out of that. So, you know, more insanity. And they hustled right out there to make sure that any good work that Reverend Sizek had done was undone as quickly as humanly possible. So that's the show tonight on what will be an otherwise shortened week. But we'll be back tomorrow and the night after that. Take a break on Christmas. There is some militancy for me to be back here on Friday. Thank you, everyone, for participating in the many ways in which you always do. Thank you to those of you who have generously contributed to the effort to keep this radio network on the air, both in the long term and in the short. Thank you for generous gifts in the last couple of days. All gifts, all contributions are generous because I know what it's like out there right now. I thank you, and I hope that others, if you haven't, will soon join in that effort so that we can know that this goes past January, goes past February, goes past March, that this, in fact, goes as long as you are determined to keep it going. Thank you to Peter Godbold and John Fox, our IT professional and chief engineer, respectively. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in Liberal Talk, who literally saved Liberal Talk starting in 2002 with WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org. They do what they do because they recognize that indeed we are all downwind and all downstream. And always, always, always. RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, ho, ho, howdy!
welcome to this foreshortened holiday week. Merry Christmas, and particularly happy solstice to you. Solstice, it's the reason for the season. And solstice happened yesterday, and so I'm feeling a little better today, because each day gets a little bit longer now. Oh, yes, we've the brutality of the full teeth of winter yet to deal with, but every day will get a little bit longer. Until soon, it'll be time to start thinking about putting that garden in the spring. Because Bambi has to eat, too. And it makes it so much more satisfying later in the year when you know that you're sending your son-in-law to hunt jerky on the hoof after they've eaten your tomatoes and your hot peppers and your sweet peppers and right down to the ground. Yeah, Bambi's belly's full and mine's empty. We can remedy that. Oh, that's going to get me in trouble. But anyway, a very happy holiday season to you all. And I'm going to try to do a little bit better job of being in the holiday spirit. Got some really cool music lined up. Of course, last night was also the first night of Hanukkah. A very happy Hanukkah to the Hanukkah celebrants in the audience. And any other holiday that comes along. See, that's the trick. Cherishing life so that we understand that every day is a holy day. Because if there is anything sacred on this planet, it is life itself. So, let's see. Where to start this evening? We've got a veritable smorgasbord on our hands. And some sillier than others, some downright infuriating, some maddening, and some funny. Sadly, less of it funny than perhaps we might.